And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. Last week, I vetoed legislation that would have allowed federal funds to finance research on microscopic stem cells, which I believe are precious human life. I cannot stand by while frozen, fertilized embryos are discarded for science. Therefore, I have adopted 32 of these stem cell lines. My favorite is George Jr. From what I can see in the microscope, he has my nucleoids. I have set up a lovely microscopic nursery in one of the drawers of my desk. I had my scientists build special cribs that are just a few microns long in anticipation of the arrival today of the subatomic stork. When they are hungry, I will pour milk on their slides until their little nucleuses are full. I will bounce the cells on my knee until they are either giggling with glee or lost forever in the fibers of my pants, in which case I will organize an immediate search to locate them. I will take them to the zoo and to the water park in tiny little strollers and let them experience everything that life has to offer before they melt. Laura and I have applications to adopt several more of these stem cell lines next week, which will bring the number of children in our family to 92. I'm going to have to get a bigger drawer. Thank you for listening, and God bless you.
And now, coming to you from the Super Digital Studio, deep within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio, this is the Rick Emerson Show.
It is.
Hello. It's 3 minutes and 18 seconds after the hour of 11 in this, the month of June in the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming along, making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. Thank you for being out there. We appreciate your presence and your patronage on this Thursday. It is Thursday, and welcome to day 12. It is 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. If you'd like to be part of today's program, telephonically speaking, if you want to email us, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com, rick@rickemerson.com, rick@rickemerson.com. You can also email Sarah at sarah@970.am, tim@970.am. And as of today, it now works. Scotty J, apparently all those emails are just vanishing into the ether. Ether. I don't even know if ether is a real thing. I mean, I know it's a thing that they give people as a sedative. But I remember there was some speculation at some point that that's how radio waves. That's what radio waves went through. What's the word I'm looking for? That's where they were transmitted. How ironic that I couldn't think of the word transmit as I was struggling to convey a word to you. Not ironic, appropriate. I'm doing that thing that I hate. Whatever. But I think they disproved later that I don't think ether plays any part in the transmission of radio waves. This is like that reptile thing from yesterday. It's best left undiscussed. We're going to move on from it right now. It's 503-733-2970 if you'd like to call us, though. But the point is, Scotty didn't, and I know that you're all longing to email him about various things. Feel free to nag him about even the slightest technical difficulty. It's Scotty J at 970.am. As for me, myself, that's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Or if you want to engage with us telephonically with your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your 2 cents, your what have you, you can do that. It's rick@rickemerson.com or 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. I'm going to start the show with this email. Rick, since you're playing the Wicked Game promo right now, which he has chosen to spell as Wicked Game, that's the one that they play in New Zealand, sir. I have definitive proof of the lyrics. I was out karaokeing the other week. What a sad statement. I was out karaokeing the other week, and someone sang Wicked Game. Badly, I'm sure. The lyrics printed on the screen were all, I don't want to fall in love.
No, karaoke can be wrong.
I know. What?
Karaoke lyrics can be wrong on karaoke machines. Because they're not licensed, and so they just kind of put whatever they think it sounds like, which I've seen happen many times.
No, and it's all done by slave laborers in China. You know that that's true. I mean, look, when is the last time you saw one of those karaoke CDs look like it was real professionally done? The karaoke CDs, and I know this because when we were doing the Bigger Than Jesus auditions years ago, and we were having guys sing the karaoke tracks, I had to find a bunch of karaoke CDs, and it all looked like those CDs the guys would sell you as you were walking down some street in Brooklyn, where the guy has, like, the beach blanket spread out, and he's selling you a cop. He's selling you the entire Lord of the Rings 12-disc set for $4. You know what it's all? It's all, like, handwritten. Like, we can crayon, letters are all backward and whatnot. All right, well, in any event, let's forget that I just spent time in an email. It's 503-733-2970. If you'd like to telephone us today, it's 503-733-2970. Let's check in today and see if Tim Riley's microphone works. No, thanks. All right, 503-733. If only we had some way to convey to the outside world that this microphone needs fixing. If only there was some way that I could speak and have my voice transmitted all over the city. So where maybe, I don't know, what do you call it? An engineer might hear it and come and fix the microphone. It'd be ironic thing now is I'm sure whatever you were saying about the microphone was really witty, but no one could hear it.
How about now?
How appropriate, yes.
Well, I'm sure there are plenty of engineers out there looking for jobs. And they should know they don't necessarily have to hire a white person.
So, if you are interested in coming by and just fixing Tim Riley's microphone on spec, we're at 2040 Southwest 1st. If you want to come by and fix my bike tire while you're at it, it's 503-733-2. We'll get to that here in a second. It's 503-733-2970 if you'd like to weigh in today. All right, what do we got? Well, coming up today, Lisa Goddard's going to join us from CNN Radio. We're talking to Lisa Goddard about trying and undoubtedly failing to pass this retarded energy bill. This thing is never going to happen. It doesn't really matter. All I really care about is Fred Thompson and how he succeeded Rudy Giuliani and this whole business about it being a Hillary Fred Thompson face off and all of that whatnot. Jim Roop is going to join us to talk about. I've got it right here. This is Jim Roop. We'll be talking about the summer of what, Tim?
The summer of 69.
No.
The summer of love.
The summer of love. Summer of love. It's the international summer. Music, drugs, and love, it said. Who better than CNN Radio's Jim Roop to cover it?
He's still a little bit too young for that.
It is true. And he's not a hippie. He didn't even grow up in some housing project in Chicago.
Yeah.
I think he did, actually. I think he grew up in, like, the Cabrini Green housing project. I'm not making that up. I'm pretty sure that that's the case. So really, he's like the wrong person to cover this in about 100 different ways, so God bless him. But I guess he is the only West Coast correspondent for CNN, so it just sort of falls to him. It's the 40th anniversary of the Summer of Love. Jim Roop apparently has Summer of Love pieces available now on the affiliate website, where they are keeping it real. Items available include, I don't know why I'm reading this, items available include a podcast as well as 7 network-length stories covering all different angles on the Summer of Love and its legacy. So there you go. So we'll talk to Jim Roop about the Summer of Love later on. We'll be doing a very special top five today. Today's top five is special in 2 different ways. And my hands are covered in grease, and it's not the typical grease. It's not the typical weekend show grease that you get on the counter. It's like actual bicycle grease. So I'm going to go get my hands another thorough scrubbing. I thought I had it off, but it's still there. I'm undoubtedly smearing it all over everything I touch. So today's top five is special in 2 ways. A, it was we've done it before, but it was a request. Somebody requested that we bring it back. It doesn't happen very often. Somebody requested that we redo a top five from the past. We're going to do the top five songs clearly stolen from other songs. Top five songs clearly stolen from other songs. We're doing that today, A, because it was requested, and B, in honor of our friends Court and Fatboy over at Rock 101 KUFO, who had an idea of their stolen. Well, what's the word? Not stolen. It's stolen by those guys at Comedy Central who do the Lil. First of all, nothing that starts with Lil, that is L-I apostrophe L, and that's not even right because there ought to be like 4 more apostrophes in there, but I'm willing to let it slide for now to make the larger point that nothing that starts with Lil is good, ever, ever, in any way. The last time anything that started with Lil was good was that little Lulu comic that came out in like 1949. That was it. After that, no more. That's how you know something's going to be terrible. Even in an ironic sense, which is undoubtedly how they're doing. And is that show even on the air yet, or is it just a thing that they've announced? Is Lil Bush on the air? Does anybody know?
I do not know.
No one's even watching.
I do not know.
Stolen and made into something.
It already seems like it was done anyway with That's My Bush.
Exactly. It had done and failed. It failed once already. And That's My Bush was not a bad show. It was okay. It wasn't great. It was okay. Anyway, so George W. Bush, boy president, from my vantage point, this is simply my observation as a pundit, callously and clearly stolen by our own company, I think. Isn't that the deal? Because it's a Comedy Central, and there's the CBS and the Viacom and the Hey Hey. So actually stolen from one section of the company and just sort of trucked on down the road and dropped off at another section of the company who are doing a bad version of the thing that they originally created, paid for, and then stole. So anyway, we'll have Court and Fatboy on today to see about that a little bit. But in honor of them, we're going to be doing the top five songs stolen from other songs. Also, the Glorious Bastard of the Week. We'll announce that later on. We'll do a Geek Watch. Which teen star, well, former teen star anyway, is now pregnant? Let's see. And, well, that's it. Well, we got some other stuff, but we'll do all of that other stuff here down the road here in just a few. We're joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well today.
Now, where did you get the Jägermeister shirt from? Was that just sitting around?
No, I think Jen Lane gave it to me a few months ago.
Oh, I could see that.
Then, right, yeah, and then I left it here, but then I went on my crazy cleaning rampage this morning and found it.
No, that's, no, it's true. We're all, I can't speak for everybody, but everybody's been a little bit manic this week. Everybody's kind of on the upswing of some weird bipolar Kinkle-esque episode this week. And so that manifested itself. That manifested itself with me staying up till like 2 in the morning and obsessively editing down a top five list, answering emails, and making big lists of pointless observations that I want to get to. Like this one. Who wants to hear a pointless observation? Okay. Oh, me. This is not so much a pointless observation as it is a question. Is it possible for a dog to be right or left-handed? You forgive the expression. Right or left-pawed? Are dogs right or left-pawed? Do dogs favor one paw?
I've never seen my dog right, so I couldn't tell you.
Well, that was exactly the same thing my wife said. And I said, is it possible? I said, do dogs have a preferential, you know, a preferred paw? And she said, I don't know. If only there was some way to have him write us a note. And I said, that's not really going to happen. And then I wondered if dogs are right-handed or left-handed. I'm just going to say, I'm not going to say right or left paw. But I mean, if dogs are right-handed or left-handed, is that a thing you can train out of them? Like they trained it out of my mom by tying her hand down and beating her with a stick, which is exactly the same method I would use for my dog. So I don't know if that's true or not. So this is a thing that kept me awake, I swear to God, for like a good 13, 14, 15 minutes last night, longer than I would have, you know, I would have already been asleep. But there I was, spending a full quarter of an hour, laying in bed, staring at the ceiling, wondering if my dog had a preference for which paw he used for something. So that's how it manifests itself when I'm going through some weird, crazed, excess energy manic cycle. For Sarah, it just means that she comes in here this morning and spends a lot of time cleaning the studio.
And then I've been obsessively watching Lost.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. I really like it.
Well,
I feel out of my... I feel kind of crazy this week.
Yeah, getting lost.
Not in a bad way. Just kind of I feel like I'm in a transitional state of some kind. I don't know. I'm not.
Well, I'm sure that's good news for somebody. Or not.
No.
No, I'm just saying. I don't know. I'm not trying to read anything into that. Anyway, so there was a Jägermeister shirt sitting over there, and I'm never sure about whether you can wear that kind of thing. There's certain things that are great and certain things that are trashy, and there's certain things that are on the dividing line between great and trashy. And I don't know where the Jägermeister shirt falls.
I can try it on over my tank tops.
Well, it doesn't matter to me. I mean, maybe you'll make it work, maybe not.
I think that I can make it
work.
And
then we have a whole bottle of Jägermeister here that Lucas Rossi brought us on Friday. Apparently his experience with radio DJs has told him that that is the way to worm himself into our
hearts. Thanks for announcing that. Someone's going to come in and steal it now.
I don't think so. People steal individual bottles of Vito from us, but I think like a $40 bottle of Jägermeister, that's a sufficiently big ticket item that I don't think it would be stolen from us. I think it'll, especially because the seal, I mean, it's still sealed. Nobody's had anything out of it.
Two more days to go before the weekend.
That is true.
Huh?
Yeah. Well, made it for one car show. Okay, that's not bad at all. You make that work. All right.
I like it.
That is a good look. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
It's really summery. Tight.
All right.
It's the first day of summer.
Let's see. Well, and so forth. Today's the first day of summer, I believe.
Oh, it is?
I was going to do a top five summer things, but it didn't really happen.
Did you celebrate by riding your bicycle, Rick Emerson?
Yes, I did.
Are you lying?
No, I'm not. No, I just don't want to. Well, we'll talk about it in a second. Tim Riley's working on the following stories for your edification today.
And they're vast and many. A pilot survives 50 hours dangling from a tree after crashing. TriMet apologizing to those fun-loving, smooching lesbian teens. Rosie's replacement could be a guy. NBC offers Paris Hilton $1 million to chat. Jake Gyllenhaal and Reese Witherspoon are over. And I say the best one for last. A valve burst.
spilling 4,000 pounds of pig's blood on an Oregon road. Kerry White, unavailable for comment. Bam! 503-733-2970. Pig's blood for a pig, said Sue Snell angrily. It's 503-733-2970. It's Rick Emerson, the radio program. Before we do anything else, we'll get some of these calls, and then I'm just going to say this right now. I have a copy of the O.J. Simpson book. I'm just going
to
say
you
it right
can't
now.
Ever keep anything to yourself.
No, I'm just going to say it right now.
How did you get that?
It came in the Michael Moore movie.
Seriously, yeah, you buy three illegal Michael Moore films, and they throw in a double murder book. Allegedly, it's creepy. I'm not going to pretend that I'm better than I am. I sat and I read, and I skipped right ahead to the killing part. And I know that makes me sound like a terrible person. But seriously, what are you buying it for? Like the first, I was born in, you know, wherever the hell he was born. And I love cornflakes and sunshine. And by the way, I was a football player for a while. And, you know, seriously, what possible reason would you have to read the first half of that book? Here's how I read the O.J. Simpson book. I read, actually, the first page or so. It's creepy. It's damn creepy. And I know that should go without saying, but I won't read anything really horrific, but let me just read the author's note to you. Let me see if I can open. See, I've got it right here. Hold on. Let me read you the author's note. For the O.J. Simpson book. Let me see if I can get this to open. It's gonna take a second. Because there were 400,000 copies, all of which were supposedly recalled, except for a single copy, which, you know, Rupert Murdoch like took home and read like with a glass of brandy or something next to a fireplace over the weekend. But there's one copy that is stashed in the News Corp vaults. But there was a single copy that was sold on eBay, and that's not where this one came from. This one was apparently scanned by some store clerk, blah 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 blah, who then, you know, put it online. Anyway, so here's the thing. So it has this. I'm sorry, that's me. So you know, there's the title page, which is called, you know, where it says "If I Did It," which is the name of the book. And then here's the creepiest single thing in this O.J. Simpson book: the author's note, which is where, you know, the author's note is sometimes where they say, like, you know, "There's many scenes in this book are composite events. Names and places have been changed to protect blah 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 blah. Any inaccuracies are those of the author, or, you know, or whatever. Like, you know, where the Castle Rock is a fictitious town, where they'll put that." Here's the author's note for this O.J. Simpson book. It's just 10 little words, and it just says, "Author's note. If I did it, this is what happened." Which is just, and that's just that.
That's pretty
it's
creepy.
It's just that. It's just all creepy. It's just all creepy right there on the front page. Anyway, and then I skipped right to the whole The Night in Question chapter, which is the chapter where he talks about, and it's just so wrong. It just feels so dirty. I'm going to ask Roop about it later. I'm going to see if he's heard anything about it. But I don't even know if I want to talk about it, because it's a thing that, by definition, probably, like, no one has read. I mean, it's out there. I mean, if you're looking for it, you can find it. It's floating around. It's just so creepy, though. So I read it, and here's the thing about it. My one observation, and then we'll get these calls, and then we'll talk about some other crap, and then we get a break, and we got Lisa Goddard and so forth. So the thing about this O.J. Simpson book, and it was a big story yesterday on the interwebs, that a single copy somehow got into the net, and of course now it's everywhere. That on the whole section where he describes, quote, "the night in question," the book claims that he did not act alone. The book claims that there was someone that he refers to only as Charlie. Which is kind of great, especially in a whole lot of ways, in an LA County crime history kind of way. Having a guy named Charlie with you when you're doing that is sort of appropriate, I guess. But clearly, Charlie is just some guy that OJ has made up, just because he's either just. Because he just desperately doesn't want to put it all on himself, even though he's confessing it all in the book, if he did it. Or he's just crazy, and he's managed to convince himself that, like, there was somebody there. And it's obvious, and it's not Cato Kalin, because he refers to Cato Kalin later on in the book. So he does the whole chapter about, so Charlie and I stepped out of the van. Oh, and then he does spend the obligatory, like, four chapters building up that Nicole was really, really crazy and grumpy.
Was she asking for it?
Well, I didn't say that. And he doesn't say it either. Not in those words. But there are a whole lot of chapters with titles like, you know, The Two Nicoles is chapter number three, where he talks about how, you know, Nicole, she apparently did a lot of the talking back and so forth. So it's all really creepy. I don't even know if I want to talk about it later, but we'll talk to Jim Rubel, see if he's heard anything about it. It's 503-733-2970. Oh, here's some answers on right and left-handed dogs and Lil Bush. Which one do we want to do first? Anyone?
We'll go with Tim. We'll go with dog.
No. I'll just hit the next button and we'll take it randomly.
I don't even know if I'm on the air half the time.
Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Lil Bush was on last night while I was playing World of Warcraft. The only thing I observed was that Chaney only says, eh. That's the only thing Lil Chaney says. That's the only part that I really observed.
Oh,
was it funny?
Except that they had a water balloon fight with an Al-Qaeda camp while they were at summer camp. No, it wasn't funny. The local one is hilarious compared to it. It's dumb. It'll go away.
That's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that they have... I mean, here's the thing. If you are a comedian or a comic writer or you're making some sort of a sitcom, if you can't make good comedy out of George W. Bush and his administration, I mean, regardless of political affiliation, if you can't make good comedy out of the Bush administration, you really ought to have your comedy-making license taken away. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's no better than the baby Looney Tunes when they put them out.
Yeah, is it... So, is it animated or is it like a puppet thing?
It is animated, and it's just they take Condi and George and Rumsfeld, and they make them little tiny, like 5 or 6 year olds.
So is it
around.
Do they make them? Do they look like children, or is it sort of a comic, like just like a shrunken version of themselves?
A shrunken childlike version of themselves, like too squat to be a normal kid. But yeah.
Is the humor at all political, or is it just, is it, in other words, if you, are they taking like a political side there? Do they take sort of hard punches at the administration, or is the whole gag just that they're little politicians?
Like I said, I was playing World of Warcraft at the time.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. Were you busy
It's not that smart. It's the only political thing that was in there at all was that they got in a water balloon fight with Al-Qaeda. I mean, there's nothing smart political about
that's
it.
That's hilarious is what that is.
Anyway.
All right, thank you. What is your World of Warcraft guild, sir?
I'm not in a guild. I was for a long time. I called in the day that he was in there talking about being in there and made fun of him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, here's a confession. I didn't really know what a guild is. I just know that's something that the World of Warcraft people say.
If you go to high school and no one likes you and you don't have any friends, you grow up and you form a guild and you be in charge of it and you tell a lot of other people what to do and they have to be nice to you.
That's exactly what I do.
See?
All right. Thank you.
All right.
All right. I didn't know if he was making that illusion or if I was just supposed to draw that. Hello, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, Rick. I don't know if dogs can really be left or right-handed or pawed or whatever, but have you ever asked a dog to, you know, look their whole trick about, you know, shake the hand?
Yeah, but
but
here's the thing. It's difficult to say with my dog, though, because we taught him that. And so we taught him that using his left paw, but we just sort of picked that paw for him. So it's hard to say.
Okay. Because, like, my brother's dog will do either leg. You stick your hand up and he'll stick one leg up.
He's ambidextrous.
Or more congenial.
He's just a more polite dog.
I don't know if it's all about the training, but the large majority of the time, my experience has always been the right leg, but sometimes it is left, so maybe that's training.
All right, we're kind of losing your call, but thank you. The thing is, we wanted to see if we could teach an old dog new tricks. What?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was just showing you that Lisa's moved from 30 to 45.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. We wanted to see if we could teach an old dog new tricks. And so when Nats was like 7 or 8, we taught him to shake hands. But again, we did it by, we would set him down, we would say, shake hands, and then we would lift up his paw, you know, blah, 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 and we'd give him a treat, huh, blah, blah, blah. And then he learned how to do it. So we sort of, imposed on him the idea of shaking hands with his left paw. So I don't really know what he would have done if left to his own devices. And he doesn't really... Like, I've never really seen him use his... Like, what is a dog really going to use his paw for in order to scratch himself? And then, again, that's dependent upon what side of the body they're itching. So, you know, whatever. There's a little white trash there. Just said itching when I meant scratching. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick, how's it going?
What's up?
Lil Bush premiered, I think, last Wednesday. And dude, I was stoned to the gills and it still wasn't funny.
That is a damning indictment, isn't it?
It really. I mean, I'll sit there and laugh at anything, and this is according to Fatboy's version is vastly superior. It's ridiculous.
Now, and see, here's the two paths that this could go down. This show could get canceled right away. In which case, all the pain and agony will dissipate. Or the show could somehow become a big hit, in which case those guys are just going to continue to get angry and angry, especially because this sounds like a vastly inferior version of George W. Bush, boy president.
Oh, absolutely. I can't see it lasting more than a couple of months. If Trey Parker was in charge, maybe it'd be a different story, but it's just not smart and not funny.
That's too bad. Another opportunity blown. Thank you, sir.
Pretty much take it easy, guys.
Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. How's it going, buddy?
What's up?
Hey, look, I totally disagree with those guys. Little Bush, it's pretty funny. The writing's really tight, and that may be these people's problem, is they don't get the writing. It's a cartoon, right?
Yeah.
And whereas, the Trey Parker show was a live version, so they can get away with a lot more. They have Dick Cheney biting the heads off chicken and sucking their blood. They have the Bush parents in it. They just rake them over the coals. Little Condi keeps hitting on Little Bush, and he's totally oblivious to it.
Little Condi.
Little Condi. Yeah, because they all have little in front of their name. L-I-L. So Little Condi, so Little Bush, Little Cheney.
So this is sort of like those Little Archie comics.
It's similar, but they're supposed to be like preschool... pre-puberescence but a lot of the writing has, you have to understand what's going on now in order to get the joke.
Yeah.
So if you're not in tune with what's going on, it's not going to be funny to you.
That is true. I guess if you're not in tune with that, it's not going to resonate. All right.
And they are tearing Bush up in it. And particularly these writers, they must have something against Barr and Batty Bush, because they're in it a lot, and they really rake those guys over the coals.
All right. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
All right, you bet. Bye.
Okay. Pre-puberescent. What? It's the age of those characters. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, what's up?
I don't know if dogs can be left or right-handed, but I know that the word for that, handedness, is chirality. I know you're in the words and stuff. It's chirality.
Is that only for dogs? I thought it was ambidextrous.
No, I'm sorry. The term for, like, being right or left-handed, the term for it is chirality, C-H-I-R-A-L-I-T-Y.
Chirality, and that means that you are, that means to have a preference for toward using one hand or another.
Exactly, the left or right hand, yeah, the chirality of a person.
Interesting. All right, thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
All right, there you go.
And I think we're done with all of that. All right, real quickly, and then we'll break. We'll come back. We'll do some crap. We got Lisa Goddard coming up. I got this. I don't think this was from Tim. I think they just faxed this to me. I know that I've made this observation before, but I really don't understand who faxes things. Really, if you fax something to me, it almost is like telegraphing the fact that the thing doesn't matter. Getting a fax, as Douglas Copeland said, is like getting an email from 1995. It just doesn't... You might as well just put at the top, old and irrelevant. Right here, can you imagine a more horrifying thing than this? The Portland Advertising Federation's Battle of the Bands is coming up. The Portland Advertising Federation, or PAF, Battle of the Bands is a night of fun dedicated to those in our industry that have the rock star desire. For one night, the musical talent in our industry will live in the spotlight and on the red carpet. Many of our member agencies have their own house bands.
They do?
Apparently. And the Portland Advertising Federation's Battle of the Bands will feature eight aging Gen Xer desperately trying to sound interesting. Verbiage alert. The Portland Advertising Federation's Battle of the Bands will feature eight totally awesome bands competing to find out who is the best. It will be a fun night supported by advertising's most talented, in and out of their leather pants. And then these are referred to as... Okay, so first of all, they're referring to the bands as being... And can you imagine a worse selection of... I mean, look, I'm sure that they may have some sort of musical talent, but really, can you imagine a worse night than going and seeing a battle of the bands in which all of the bands come from the Portland Advertising Federation? Really, I mean, honestly, it's just going to be, it's going to be like 45 of that Bank One guys all standing on stage trying to cram themselves into some tight-fitting clothing that they wore in 1987. Just a bunch of bad advertising executives in Jordache. Anyway, so listen to this. Not only did they describe the bands as being, quote, totally awesome. I used to have a T-shirt, I think, that said totally awesome, you know, when I was like nine. These are totally awesome, quote, butt, end quote, bands. I'm pretty sure that they mean butt rock, although it is entirely possible that they're just butt bands. A butt band sounds like a thing that I might buy at Spartacus, quite frankly. But, you know, who knows? Who am I to say? Buy your tickets. It's going to be standing room only. Rock on, it says in huge italicized letters. Thank you for that. No time to do anything else except to say this, that I did bicycle today, you sons of bitches, and I got a flat halfway here.
Oh, that sucks.
So that was a lot of fun. And not only this, it was a weird day anyway, because I got about a third of the way from my house and realized that it... Do you ever do this when you're biking and something is different, you can't figure out what it is? And then I realized I didn't have my helmet, which is insane because I never bike without my helmet. I got a third of the way from my house and realized for whatever just mad reason I left without my helmet. So I'm already having to bike really slowly because I don't want to end up, you know, I don't want to get all shivoed on the way to work. And so I'm biking really slowly to work. And then just as I'm getting like right toward OMSI, that's... And then I got the flat. And you don't even realize the difference between biking somewhere and walking somewhere until you get a flat tire. And it takes you like 9 hours to walk to wherever it is you were going to bike to. So I'm all covered in grease and my bike is sitting. You know what? Here's what, something I don't understand. And I know I'm over time here. But here's something I don't understand. I don't know why they don't have a mobile bike repair service in Portland. You know what I mean?
That's a good idea.
It's a great idea. That everybody I told you this morning, they're like, that's a great idea. If you want to make money right now, you start a mobile bike repair service, and it would be just like a bike messenger guy, except instead of being a bike messenger, he would have like a bag that had like his bike tools and just a
AAA for bikes.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. And it would be like a mobile bike repair place. He'd come fix your crap while you're at work. Like today. Because, you know, it's like, I'm not all that good at changing my own, but fixing my own flats anyway. I'm just not very good at it, and I certainly don't have the crap with me to do it regardless. So if there was some sort of mobile bike repair service, and I'm honestly not, this is really honestly not a pitch to like get someone to come fix my bike. I'm just saying, if there was just some service where like I get to work, I call it, the guy comes and he fixes my crap sometime while I'm at work, then by the time I got up work, it's done. I don't know why that doesn't exist, and I don't think it does, because I've asked a bunch of people in the building who bike, and none of them have heard of such a thing. So I'm just saying, you're lacking money right now, looking for a fantastic business opportunity, that's a niche that needs to be filled. AAA for bikes, a mobile bike repair service, right here in Portland, Oregon. And you talk about all the cities in the world in which that would be a success. I mean, it's right here. All right. Fear is right here in this room. I haven't even gotten to this thing about Joss Whedon and how they're doing this this Buffy thing. What theater are they doing this at? Where is it? It's the Hollywood Theater. They're doing some Buffy the Vampire Slayer thing. Well, okay. We'll talk about that later. Lisa Goddard coming up around the corner. Top five songs stolen from other songs. Jim Roop on the Summer of Love. Tim Riley at the Noon News Hour and all of that. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. Radio program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Rick. Okay, this is the final word on Wicked Game. No, we're never talking about it again.
Still.
What can you do? Rick, as I live with someone who is, to put it lightly, a fan of Chris Isaak, and I know this person, and I know the person that they are talking about, and this person is a huge fan. One might even say a little obsessed with Chris Isaak. Let me tell you definitively, the line is indeed, I don't want to fall in love. I don't want to fall in love. I repeat, I don't want to fall in love. Love! Language of love. Wicked Game is about a longtime booty call who has fallen for the singer of the song. He does not want to fall in love. Blah, 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 blah. She wants to. So endeth the lesson. This is this person. Rick, about Lil. Perhaps this is the exception to the rule, but Lil Smokies are genius. I've never had a Lil Smokie. Let me tell you that right now.
Oh, they're good.
I've, this is one of those foods I've never had.
How could you live in Kennewick and not have a Lil Smokie?
F you. What are you talking about?
We all come from our, you know, different trashy backgrounds.
Is a little smoky the same as a Vienna sausage?
No, they're just like the little teeny ones. I don't know what a Vienna sausage is.
It's a tiny little sausage that comes in a can.
Well, then I think they're the same.
Little
smokies have like barbecue sauce on them.
Is a little smoky the same as a Vienna sausage? Let's now. I should have spun the wheel beforehand. Anyway, Lil Smokies are genius, he says, especially the ones with cheddar baked right in, like manna from heaven it is. And then it's just on, Lil Smokies.
Lil Smokies at barbecues are the best, too.
Lil Smokies just sound so weird.
Oh, they're great, though, because they're filling and you're not eating a lot of bread, you know, like with hot dogs.
Here's the thing, and I know that I'm trashy and so I'm supposed to like hot dogs, but I really don't.
I could live on hot dogs.
See, and I don't like hot dogs. It's not like they're the worst food on earth, but I don't really like hot dogs. I don't especially like corn dogs. The only hot dog that I'm really a huge fan of is the hot dog that they sell at 7-Eleven. I like 7-Eleven Big Bite hot dogs, and that's, goddamn, we're just hicks. That's really the only hot dog that I care for, is that big-ass one that you can buy at 7-Eleven for like $1.19.
At Zach's Shack on Hawthorne, they have veggie dogs. They have this thing actually called a Dylan dog. Not anything having to do with me, yeah, but it's cream cheese and tomato and onions and then with a veggie dog, and it is amazing.
Now, I do like sausage every now and again.
They have sausages and all kinds of things.
Because there's an Otto's Sausage House. I'm a big fan of that place on Woodstock, I think it is. And then there's that, what is that place? It looks like a Wiener Schnitzel hut. It's on that street, in that place, with that guy. It's by the Laurelhurst. I think it's on Burnside. And it's like, it looks like a Wiener Schnitzel place. You ever gone to their Wiener Schnitzel?
Mm-mm.
Okay, never mind.
But I'm kind of going to go to, I think I'm going to go to Otto's this afternoon.
Dumbest conversation. They have Viso there, too. All right, let's just forget that we had this whole discussion. It's 503-733-2970. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the Hill. CNN Radio correspondent to the stars. Lisa Goddard, why hello there.
Well, hello.
Let me ask you this, as Rush Limbaugh would say.
All right.
Do you know the difference between a Vienna sausage and a Lil Smokey?
Do they both come in cans?
I don't really know. No, I'm not. This is,
I feel
it's
like
not...
just the Lil Smokey comes in the can. I don't know. No, I'm going to go with no. I do not know. I feel like in my head I could, if you gave me...
You're not going to win a prize or anything, by the way.
I'm
only asking because Sarah and I can't really suss out the difference. Because here's the thing. It's weird. It's like a Lady Hawk kind of a conundrum. Where she knows about Lil Smokies but not Vienna sausages. And I know what a Vienna sausage is, but not a Lil Smokey. And we can't do some. There's no Vulcan mind meld at this point. Like, we can't hook our brains together. We're like an Ethernet cable, so we have no way of, like, comparing.
They must just be different brands, right? Is it the same thing?
See, but that's the thing is, I don't really know. I have no way of ascertaining it unless I want to stop down and take, like, 5 minutes and Wikipedia the whole thing. And really, that just seems like an overly capricious use of my time. So, you know, it's... That's okay. I figured I would ask you because one never knows. Part of the mission to keep it real, I thought that you all at CNNRadio.com might know about the difference between various pork and beef-type sausage products.
We do keep it proverbially real. It's true. That's what we do.
You don't really sound like you're sold on it.
I'm not.
Like you're maybe...
I told you, sometimes by slowing things down, it sounds much more profound, but that didn't work.
You can add gravitas.
Exactly right.
Like that's like how with like an acting school. So like you can always tell bad acting because it, like bad actors sometimes they just get told that the key is just to speak really slowly and really softly, and it makes it sound. It's like how have you noticed this trend on television lately? And if you haven't, you will now. This trend on television towards having everything more dimly lit. Like back in the day, like you think about sitcoms, like you think about Alice and you think about the One Day at a Time, Three's Company, everything brightly lit, blazingly like the sun. And then you think about television shows now, especially anything that's an hour long, and it's like everything is pitch black and there's like one tiny like banker's lamp in the corner lighting the whole set. I mean, it's insane. And that is the legacy of Aaron Sorkin. All television programs now are dimly lit because dimly lit equals quality.
That's right. You said Mork and Mindy?
Yeah, no, you go back and it's like, you go back and watch those old shows, even dramas like Dallas Dynasty from the 80s, every light in the house on and like and apparently no roof because like a supernova was blazing overhead.
Right, right. It was a tanning program for the actors, essentially.
The whole thing is, anyway, so that's my pointless pop culture
Jim J. Bullock, by the way.
Jim, it's not Jim J. Bullock.
Oh, it's not?
It's, no, it's, I found this out the other day. It is not Jim J. Bullock, it is Jim J. Bullock. There is no I in that.
Oh, it really?
J.M.
No.
J. Bullock. It's, his first name is actually just J.M. Jim J. Bullock. You can look it up if you don't believe me. It's that is actually how he refers to himself. And by the way, Jim J. Bullock, still alive. I thought he was dead. He is still alive. He lives.
Wow.
You could invite him to your wedding.
I should have thought of inviting him. I am disappointed about
it. What else is he doing right now? He's just sitting around.
That's true. Maybe he doesn't even have to win the contest. Maybe just for being Jim. I'll email him.
He's just sitting around waiting for some sort of Love Boat 21st century, to come back on the air. So he's waiting for That's Incredible to begin another run.
Oh.
All right. So I don't want to be accused of taking up all your time just talking about Jim J. Bullock and Little Smokies.
Hey, we got all the time in the world today. I've got nothing next.
Yes, but I don't wish for Laura to think that I simply that we just siphon off moments of your life for no real reason.
I mean, we work for you, Rick.
Well, I like to think so, but now I swear to God, it's written this way. Will the Senate energy bill run out of gas? you don't write these, do you?
Real.
Do you don't have to tell me who does write them, but you don't write these, do you?
No.
All right, because here's another thing they say about the Summer of Love. This is for Roop. It says Summer of Love, music, drugs, and free love. Who better than CNN Radio's Jim Roop to cover it? Because, you know...
There's something to that. There's something a little funny about that.
Yeah, maybe your office parties are a little wilder than I have been led to believe. Anyway, so there's Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, and, you know, they're all, you know, they're talking about energy and the environment, and it's all bundled together because there's energy, and then there's terrorism, and there's the environment, and there's global warming, and then there's just the general movement to be more green, and I don't know to what extent these things are all conflated or separate, so, I don't know, just...
again, ding, ding.
Make me smarter. Tell me what's happening.
All right. People, get out your risk game board. We're going to take you through some complicated stuff, potentially.
Okay.
It really is getting to be quite messy here in the Senate. The simplest story I can tell you right now is there is a separate from the energy bill, Democrats are trying to get some environment or street cred, I guess you could call it.
Uh-huh.
And they are working to make the Capitol itself carbon neutral. They had a big press conference about that this morning, and that means that essentially they're going to be buying carbon offset to make up for the fact that the Capitol itself uses the only coal-burning plant left in Washington, D.C.
Is that true?
Yes.
The Capitol uses a coal-burning whatever, like to heat or to... You're kidding me.
The Capitol Power Plant is a coal-burning plant. Now, it's a bit of a misnomer because it's the power plant does not supply the electricity for the Capitol, but it does supply the heat and air for the Capitol.
Okay.
It is coal-burning. It is the last coal-burning plant in Washington, D.C.
Stop everything right now. Why in the name of sweet, holy, zombie God, please tell me it's not because it's a historical artifact.
No.
Why haven't they just gotten rid of it?
Well, I mean, the small children that they work there through forced labor also
I mean, seriously.
Enjoy the money that they get.
Honestly, I mean, okay.
Right, well, honestly, the House has made, as part of this news conference today, Nancy Pelosi said the House will no longer be getting anything from the coal-powered power plant, but the Senate is a different ball of wax because in the Senate, several very powerful coal state senators, including the nation's most senior senator, Robert Byrd, and others, Democrats and Republicans, want that plant to stay in operation. And, in fact, they want to use it potentially to pilot new programs to use different kinds of coal.
Please tell me that you're going to use the phrase clean coal.
They're not quite throwing that around, but potentially they're leaning in that direction. But the point is that they see it as symbolic. They have coal mining states. They support the coal industry. They want to keep this power plant going. It's a symbolic battle.
It is symbolic. I'll give you that. The fact that the Capitol, who are in the process of telling me how to live my life and how to do every single, how to do everything I do and how to conduct every facet of my existence as a coal-burning stove.
Yeah.
That's like the day that, I remember how old I was like 15, 14, something like that. That's like the day I learned that the White House was largely built by slaves. I mean, you know what I mean? You just can't, Michael Moore couldn't.
Capital
couldn't,
as well, it's true.
Yeah, couldn't find better symbolism than that. So
maybe he'll do an, I would, actually, energy is a great topic. I think there should, someone needs to do a good documentary on energy in the United States.
Let me ask you this, because here's the thing that I don't know. Here's two things, and I know that will come as a huge shock to you.
What?
Here's two things I don't know. A, is there such a thing in your journalistic opinion, from what you have seen, as clean coal, or is that a fabricated term?
No, I don't think that's fabricated, but it is an expensive technology right now, and it is something that much of the coal industry does not want to embrace.
All right. Secondly, I know that I'm supposed to know this, living in a progressive state as I do, but what is biodiesel? I don't even know what that means.
Oh, well, I know what ultra-low sulfur diesel is, as opposed to biodiesel, I believe, has got to be. And this is, I am not an expert on biodiesel, but just from the name, it sounds like it's got to be some diesel that perhaps could have some sort of ethanol components.
I don't know. Is it like made out of corn cobs or something? I mean, I really honestly don't know, but that's a phrase you hear a lot.
They're putting more ethanol in our gasoline in general, and not just E85, but just general gas that you get. Biodiesel... My understanding is it's diesel that comes from, it's derived from some kind of biological source, some kind of renewable source.
Okay, all right, fair enough. See, these are all things that I don't know, and they're terms that people bandy about.
Right.
When somebody, because Gore talked about carbon offsets because his house uses like 9 jillion, you know, gigajoules of energy or whatever a year. A carbon offset is what? It's like some sort of weird gift certificate, like for Hickory Farms, but it's for air or something, or
like that. Essentially, it's swapping your. It's on. I don't know if you remember when Ralph Nader was running, and they had that vote swap.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Getting to a whole other subject, but it's a little bit like that idea. That, for instance, say the United States Capitol. Say you decided to move away from the coal-powered plant, but the fact is that you still burn a lot of electricity. And you're still not going to be able to offset all the carbon that you release in the atmosphere from your electricity on your own, at least not now, not without completely sort of renovating the Capitol with new systems, all that kind of thing. So in the meanwhile, what they're doing at the Capitol, in addition to these other plans, they will be paying for offset. And what that does is you pay a company, and that company... they can do it through a variety of ways, but essentially they pay for someone else to reduce their carbon emissions, or they pay for something that reduces the carbon emissions in the atmosphere, like, for instance, planting acreage of trees, which helps the carbon dioxide balance.
All right, okay, fair enough.
Carbon dioxide. So you pay to offset the carbon dioxide you're putting in the atmosphere.
You know what this is like? This is like in the medieval times when the Catholic Church would sell indulgences. Where a sin eater, like you could pay, you could sin all you wanted, and then like you would pay a guy to eat your sin. And then the deal is that he made a lot of money here in this life, here in the terrestrial world. But when he died, he was damned to hell for all the sin he had eaten.
Right.
That's exactly what carbon offsets are. Carbon offsets are the sin eating of the 21st century secular world.
Right.
You can use that if you like.
Okay, thanks.
All right, finally.
Yes.
This is completely off subject, but Harry Reid came up here.
Yes.
Have I asked you before? Maybe I did, and if so, I apologize. I got kind of a Teflon brain. Did I ask you about this thing where Harry Reid referred to illegal aliens as undocumented Americans?
No, you haven't asked me about that. But, you know, I was just sitting not 5 feet from Harry Reid.
I'm pretty sure that's a thing he said about 10 days ago. I'm pretty sure he referred to illegal aliens as undocumented Americans, which is an interesting bit of newspeak.
Yeah, so that's certainly interesting.
I don't know whether he really said it or not. But if you, I don't know, if you get a chance, like if you got, you know, like nothing to do someday, I'd be curious to know, because I didn't really, wasn't able to find it. I'd be curious to know whether that's a thing he actually said. That's an interesting phrase, and I'm wondering whether that's a little bit of a test balloon, like for a new talking point or a new bit of verbiage they're trying to foist on.
I see it all over the blog now that I put a search in here.
All right. And so it is. So it is. It is a thing he actually said.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's all over the blogs. I have no idea if it's real or not.
Well, so the it is purported though now apparently by many people to be a thing he said.
It is. These look like conservative blogs. I don't know.
All right. Well, fair enough.
Is this true or not?
Interesting, because if he actually said that, that's pretty telling, because you know that's a phrase that wouldn't... That's a phrase that nobody's ever said before. That's a phrase that would not just naturally fall out of his mouth. Clearly, that's a phrase that you have thought about before you say.
Huh.
So, the calling...
There apparently is a video of it, and apparently he said it on the floor of the Senate, so it sounds possible that that's correct.
Interesting. I mean, I suppose geographically, it might be correct if you sort of consider if he is speaking solely about people from Mexico, which is, of course, one of the Americas.
Right. And if you say they're undocumented Americans, they're probably documented Mexicans.
They're documented somewhere, just not here.
Right.
All right. Interesting. Wait.
I've got to, in 30 seconds, go through the state of affairs on the energy bill because it's a mess.
Okay. Please do.
This is the deal. In two votes in the past couple of hours, Republicans managed to block a major component of the energy bill. This was a proposal from Democrats. It still may live again, but right now it's not in great shape. It's blocked from the current bill. This is a proposal that would raise taxes on oil companies by about $29 billion, use that money for alternative energy. Republicans blocked it, so that's out. Also out of the bill in the last couple of hours, a very popular proposal that would require the U.S. move so that 15% of our electricity in the coming decades would be from renewable sources. It's called the Renewable Portfolio Strategy, RPS. And it's very popular, actually, in the Senate, but it's been dropped now because of the back and forth between Republicans and Democrats. So what's left in this energy bill that probably has the most substance, these were some of the biggest things Democrats were fighting to get to try and change the way America deals with energy. Both of them gone. The thing that is left now is CAFE standards, which are the fuel efficiency standards. Right now in the bill, I think that's 36 miles per gallon. In 15 years, cars in the U.S., new cars must average 15 years, new cars in the U.S. must average 36 miles per gallon under this bill. But even that now is being negotiated. So they're having a tough time, and it's no secret why the Democrats just have a two-vote, not really even that majority for ideas, but who knows, maybe the House will pass it, it might come back in conference. But all of this is also tied to the immigration bill, and to cut to the chase, it looks like we might be here this weekend, might be here next weekend as well, to try and sort all of this out, and in the end, it's not clear that either the energy bill or the immigration bill is certain to pass, though the energy bill looks more likely.
So that's a whole lot of, we're all going to work a lot of overtime, and in the end, nothing will happen.
It's not clear.
That's great.
There will be an energy bill. There will be. The issue is whether it has these fuel efficiency standards in it or not.
Let me just, my final, and we're so late that I might as well go a little later here.
No, I'm sorry.
Here's the only, it's not you, Lisa, it's me. here's the only way that anything's ever going to work, and I was thinking about this while you were talking, and not that I wasn't listening, but I was thinking about how there's, this business of in 15 years, you got to get 36 miles of the gallon. There ought to be just some regulation passed that from now on, any and all new laws or legislation or whatever passed by Congress, any new laws, don't take effect for 50 years. They don't take it because that will then free Congress from being beholden to their to the lobbyists and special interest groups. You know what I mean? In other words, like that's why we don't have real campaign finance reform, because people who are in office now need that graft money. And so, I'm sorry, did I say graft? They need that money.
There's a caller on C-SPAN who said, with all of these lobbying laws, why don't they just put them in effect 2 years
from now? That's what I mean. But I mean, seriously, just cut the Gordian knot and just make it, say, look, we're going to revamp all these laws and make it the America that we really need to have, but it's not going to take effect for 50 years, which means that we will be able to vote our conscience because we're not going to get penalized for it by some lobbying group. So,
right.
I'm just saying. All right.
Ew.
Okay. Well, that's pretty much it. I would
stop at the plant.
I don't want to take up any more of your time. Enjoy the.
Sorry,
I don't know.
Look at my shovel.
Yeah, there's some joke here, but I don't know what it is. I was going to make some coal joke, but it's falling apart here at the end.
My shovel and my apron.
Indeed. Are you on tomorrow?
I am. I'll be here tomorrow.
All right. We will talk to you then. Enjoy your afternoon, Lisa.
Excellent.
All right. Thanks. Fantastic. There you go, Lisa Goddard. I apologize to the guys who are on hold waiting about Lil Smokies and biodiesel. We'll get you here in a second as part of the noon news hour, so you hang on. If you're there for Lil Smokies or biodiesel, thank you so much. Scotty and Line 4, would you tell Line 4 I'll talk to him in here in a second? All right, thank you. The guy has a bike thing. Anyway, it's 503-733-2970. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. Tim Riley next. One of those days where we need like a 7-hour show. And even with that whole hour, I only was able to glancingly mention this OJ book. But let me just say this. My one observation about this OJ Simpson book. I mean, I read the first couple chapters, and then I skipped to that whole The Night in Question chapter, because that's the one, of course, that's the whole, you don't really anybody cares about the book. And I wonder if you got to wonder who it is that leaked it or who it is that put it on the internet. Because it wasn't the Goldman family, probably, because they were going to make money on the weird retitled version that they were going to put out. Anyway, and then I read the closing to see how he wrapped it all up. But the thing about it, and it was co-written, it was a ghost written by some guy from the Inquirer. Because first of all, I mean, if you've seen any extended interviews with O.J. Simpson at any point in his career, clearly he's not the most polished of speakers. I wouldn't say that his vocabulary is extensive. And so this is written. Like, you ever read a book by some celebrity? And even if there's no ghostwriter listed, clearly they did not write it themselves. That's the thing with his O.J. book. But it all has the absolute ring of truth to it. Every single line that I read, it sounds like the real deal, except for the chapter about killing Nicole. That's the only part that sounds like it's big. Because he does the whole, and then I blacked out. And the next thing I knew, Nicole and Ron Goldman are dead. I have no idea how it happened. There was blood everywhere, but I'm not really sure how that happened, though. Anyway, so later on in the Bronco, and he just totally, it's like this huge section of it where he just, then it all went fuzzy for a while, and then he comes back, and it's just, it's him and Al Cowling. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll get these calls in a second. At the Ministry of Truth, it's Tim Riley.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News.
Time like an hour ago.
970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Pilot is recuperating after spending 50 hours dangling from a tree after his plane crashed into it. This happened in Mississippi. The Civil Air Patrol says 52-year-old Dennis Steinbach of Klamath Falls was thought to have broken bones in both legs and is suffering from dehydration, but he's not in critical condition. So eventually he'll heal up. He was flying from Alabama to Missouri.
Oh, that's creepy. How long? 50 hours?
50 hours. Dangling from a tree.
Sitting there waiting to be eaten by some sort of large snake.
Yeah. Well, TriMet has apologized to those two smooching teenage lesbian gals. Removing from the bus was not consistent with our policy, says TriMet. We want to reiterate that we welcome all riders to our system. The girl said the driver called them sickos after female passengers complained about their kiss. Then he stopped the bus and told them to get out.
What fellow passenger? Well, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah.
So what does it say? What bus line they were riding?
That was 12.
Where does that go? Because I'm trying to imagine
that nobody wants to go.
I'm trying to imagine the average person on the TriMet and why they would even care.
To toothless redneck land.
Seriously, like who? Right. I mean, look, I ride the bus sometimes. I ride the Max occasionally. But let's be honest. I'm speaking out of the vast number of people who ride TriMet. Who are you to make assessments? Who are you to pass judgment? And I think I speak for all of us here in this room.
Yeah.
Who are you on the TriMet to make assessments of anyone ever for anything at any time?
Jesus. So this made national news.
Yeah. It was on the Drudge Report this morning.
Yeah, I know. So that's so they can get back on the bus.
Excellent.
I think they give them a free pass or something.
Yeah.
No. The man whose truck plunged into Columbia yesterday morning had suffered a heart attack and passed out, which is why he lost control and ended up in the river. And this fellow remains in a coma. They believe that after his heart attack, the cold weather shocked him back to consciousness and screamed for help until he was saved. Some of the other local stuff. Well, for the third time in 24 hours, somebody hit a Portland police car. The latest one.
Tell me it was on Powell.
No, this is Northeast Gleason. And Northeast 102nd, which is a little bit further up.
At least it was on the east side, though, so the street
this
continues.
This was a stolen Toyota in a police car.
Of course.
Tried to take a turn too fast and hit the police car.
Are you sure you're not just reading yesterday?
It's like Groundhog Day.
blah, 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 campers. I'll tell you my great idea about the Groundhog Day alarm clock.
No, please do.
Don't you think they ought to sell a Groundhog Day alarm clock?
I do, very much.
What, they have to wake up to Sonny and Cher every morning?
Yeah, totally. It looks just like Bill Murray's alarm clock in Groundhog Day. It wakes you up with not just the Sonny and Cher, but it wakes you up with that whole the whole radio thing. Put on your booties, campers. It's Groundhog Day. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then and then it says 6 a.m., but then it alternates back and forth between 6 a.m. and the real time. And so it has the old flippy dial thing on the front of it, too, you know, with the letters flipped down. But it alternates back and forth between 6 and the real time, so you can actually, so it's a usable clock. But it wakes you up with not only the song, but the whole radio speech. How great would that be? I would buy one of those today if that was if they had it.
Let me just, there are just too many good ideas on this program.
It really is true. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Things are going so well.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
So, Rick, on the topic of biodiesel, it can be made from a blend of,
yes.
You know, vegetable oil,
yeah.
Methyl alcohol, and lye.
Wait, the actual lye, L-Y-E?
Yeah, like the, you know, the stuff that Granny Clampett used to wash Ellie Mae in.
Like the kind of, the sort of thing you dispose of bodies with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sodium hydroxide or whatever. But anyway, it's a blend. So basically what I'm saying is you can make it in your garage.
So it's like vegetable oil.
Vegetable oil, straight up.
Why don't we just, and well, of course it's because of an oil cartel, but I mean, yeah. I was just going to ask, why didn't everything run on that thing? So is that, now can you modify like the typical American car to run on vegetable oil?
Yeah, you can. You don't have to modify your car at all to run off biodiesel.
So biodiesel, so it is basically, it is just fuel made out of whatever, made out of, again, like the
clean coal technology,
corn stumps or something.
Well, the vegetable oil that you buy in the store comes from the canola plant, or it's made from corn, or it's made from a bunch of different seed crops.
Right.
And whatever you've got in your cupboard right now that you lubricate your pan with at home and you cook on it, you could make it into diesel to run in a regular car.
Interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah.
So why doesn't everybody, there ought to be some service that just turns your car into something that can run on that, or that just sells that or something, you know what I mean?
Well, there is actually, and to be honest with you, just a few months ago, well, it was January, Joshua Tickell, who is a pioneering figure in the biodiesel and vegetable oil fuel community, was in Portland selling his book. Wife and I went to his little seminar.
Yeah.
That was a good time.
Yeah.
By the way, Rick, this is the fella from Woodburn that sent you the Woodcock story.
Oh, excellent. God bless you, sir. Thank you.
And I do appreciate you playing that for me. That really made my day.
My darling little Woodcock.
That's right.
Yeah, thank you. God bless you. All right, thank you, my friend.
Fantastic.
There you go.
Take her easy.
There you go. All right. Let me just move through these and then... Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Chad, what's up?
Hey, Rick, how we doing?
Hey, I'm okay. We're running really, really, really late today. Don't feel like I'm trying to rush you along. I'm just saying everything's about 40 minutes off today. What's up?
Oh, that's quite all right. The difference between Little Smokies and Vienna sausages.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Little Smokies yeah. are actually little sausages. They use the little, you know, the actual sausage casing, and they're just like mini sausages. The Vienna sausages are more like bologna. They're made from lips and snouts. Shall we say?
Lips and snouts. They're made for Angus.
Yeah.
Lips and Angus.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So that's it, man. That's
okay.
Why I was on hold for 40 minutes.
I'm sorry. So,
it's all right.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Okay. I'm so sorry that we're running late. Let me just we'll finish things up now for the love of... Hi, Joel. You're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Yes. The guy that before with the biodiesel, he's only partially right.
Okay.
sorry.
No, that's okay. Tell me.
Only you can switch any American diesel engine to biodiesel just by changing cords, lines in the engine, because the biodiesel eats through the regular like gasoline.
Well, why wouldn't everybody do that then? It seems like you'd save a lot of money.
It's easier not to.
Yeah, no, that's true. Never before has an answer about an American behavior been so accurate. You know what? That's the same reason I'm looking for a mobile bike guy to come fix my bike, as opposed to doing it myself. Easier not to do it myself.
Yeah, and it started in World War II with the diesel engines, and diesel engines can run on anything combustible.
Interesting. I had no idea. All right, excellent. Well, thank you, sir. I like to know stuff. Thank you.
No problem.
There you go. That's Joel. All right. I see AJ here. AJ, I know you've been holding, but we'll get to you in a few. If you can just hang on there. Here's Tim Riley.
A priest and his lady friend traveling through Oregon have not been seen since they came to the Rose Festival and stayed at a Portland hotel. Father Schwartz was heading for an Oregon hiking trip with his 61-year-old companion Cheryl Gibbs when they disappeared. Rosemary Mulligan is the Sacramento native sister. She says she fears the worst.
And David worked his whole life to make it to heaven. If that's where David's at, that's a good thing.
What? Okay, creepy.
That is creepy.
He worked his whole life to make a what?
This happened, whatever that meant.
Okay, let's play this again.
Okay, let's do it. Apparently, they think they wandered into the woods to meet friendly animals. And you know what happens when people do that in Oregon.
You meet the friendly animal's stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They find skeletons with horrific looks on their faces.
The skeleton huddled over for warmth.
Yeah.
David worked his whole life to make it to heaven. If that's where David's at, that's a good thing.
Oh, no, not to make it happen, to make it to heaven. That's what she's saying.
So that you give up?
David worked his whole life to make... Okay.
So if you want to go to heaven, you go to the Oregon woods.
No, well, that is true.
Why don't we all go there then?
You've never sounded more like a cult leader. We're all going to heaven. Meet me in the Oregon woods. If the children cannot make it on their own, bring them in your arms. Play it one more time just so you can hear the whisper at the end. That's the real creepy
David
money.
David worked his whole life to make it to heaven. If that's where David's at, that's a good thing.
Oh, that's so creepy.
So if you want to get to heaven, come to the Rose Festival.
Crazy.
Stay overnight, then go for a walk in the woods.
Be left alone on top of the Ferris wheel by some meth-addled carny.
Maybe they're still there.
Yeah. AJ, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hi, Rick. How you doing?
What's up, brother?
Hey, I heard that you were talking about needing a mobile bike repair, and I offer such a service in Portland.
Okay, now, I don't wish for it to look, to be very careful here, I don't wish for it to look as though I'm using the power of the Rick Emerson Show to obtain goods and services for myself or anyone else. That would be wrong. Wouldn't that be wrong, everybody?
Yes.
There, wouldn't that be wrong?
Yes.
Very, very wrong.
It'd be ever wrong. I really am honestly intrigued by this because there's a lot, obviously Portland's a big biking community, a lot of people who bike here.
Exactly.
Some of them for the retarded, some of them just cuz. And so when I was like, oh, there ought to be some mobile bike repair service, and then, but so there is. So you're saying that that's a thing that does exist. And you do that, or is it just like you, like a bike messenger, but like you got tools with you or something?
Not at all. I operate out of a van, and I come to you at home, at work, at location of your choice. You
now
know,
he just
so.
Needs you to help him get a couch into the back of the van.
Yes, seriously. Nine morning, but that doesn't make any sense. Why are you in a van?
Well, because then I can haul around all my tools and parts, accessories.
Okay, I guess that makes sense. It just seemed funny there. It's like those Harley guys. Every guy in Harley clothing is in a car. All right. Okay. So then, fair enough. All right. So so you come around, then you fix crap for people.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that's very cool. I guess, and again, I am. I am saying this now simply as a public service. I am obviously not doing this to gain favor for myself. And anyway, go ahead and give a plug. What's the name of your business?
The name of the business is Psychology Mobile Bike Repair. C-Y-C-O-L-O-G-Y.
C-Y-C-O-L-O-G-Y. And you have like a website or something?
I do. It's www.psychologymbr, as in mobilebikerepair.com.
Psychologymbr.com. Cool. Excellent. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Rick.
All right, God bless you. There you go. That's AJ. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Let's send a salesperson out there right away.
Seriously.
A battle with a trek.
Can I just tell you, that was Scotty's. Scotty told me during the break. He's like, you should let him say everything but the name of his business and then demand that he talk to an AE before you let him say it. That was Scotty's whole thing there. That God bless Scotty. He's always thinking how to make money for the station. I was like, you should let him say everything except the name of the business, and then tell him he can say it as soon as he talks to a representative from the sales department.
I like his way of thinking.
All right. I'm sorry. We're so behind. Here's Tim.
Dateline Klamath Falls. A valve on the truck hauling animal waste from a Klamath Falls processing plant broke, spilling 4,000 pounds of pig's blood. A biohazards cleaning company from Prineville was called in to clean it up. It was about 200 feet of roadway, flooded by blood. Residents worried about the stench and health hazards.
Flooded by blood. I'm going to add that to the... remember how yesterday I decided to form a grindcore band called Faceful of Quills? Our first album was going to be called Flooded by Blood.
Now, this truck full of the pig blood was heading for Tacoma, where those type of things are appreciated.
Why? Okay. I mean this seriously now. I'm not trying to set up some sort of a punchline. Why do you need 4,000 gallons of pig blood in Tacoma?
I don't know. It may be their main industry for all I know.
Pigs. It's, I can't even think of a joke
America's
that really
pig
is.
Pig blood capital.
for the pig blood, for the swine festival. Seriously, I mean, really, truly, and it was headed for Tacoma. Mm-hmm. All right, and so the road was, what road was this?
This was, doesn't say.
Some. Well, I guess it is easy to spot.
Probably I-5.
or 82nd and Powell. That's where everything can happen. 4,000 gallons flooded by pig blood.
Mm-hmm.
Flooded. Did I already make a Kerry joke?
I did.
All right. Well, just make it again in your head. Flooded by blood.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. If anybody knows why Tacoma needs 4,000... Look, here's the thing. In certain cities in this country, if the cops pull you over and you got like too many packets of matches in your trunk, they'll arrest you for being suspicious. What is it that you need 4,000 gallons of pig blood for? I mean, how many rituals can one coven really perform, like in a given period of time? I really
waste not, want not.
I suppose. I mean, and you know, do you ever think about this? And you don't. You think about Scotty's still on the phone with the psychology guy, the mobile bike guy, by the way. You know that Scotty's leaning on him to talk to somebody in the sales department right now. You know that's happening.
Sign an annual.
Would you like to have a spec spot cut? The Rick doesn't mind. He'll just sit in the studio and do those all day. He doesn't care. 4,000 gallons of pig's blood. So. You never really think about all the various steps between you and a product or between a product and the store. There's some poor soul in this world whose job it is to, like, corral all the pig's blood.
Yes.
And to, like, then make sure it all gets in the truck. You know what I mean? Like, so, at some point, there's, like, some farmer who raises pigs. And then, you know, whenever there's you know, like, pork chops at the store. Somewhere between step A and step Z, there's, like, step L. And there's some guy who goes to work every day, and his whole job is just to gather up swine blood. I mean, that's a bad job. That's a job. That's what they ought to scare kids with in high school. Not that you're going to end up, you know, because clearly this doesn't threatening that you're going to end up going to Iraq doesn't sufficiently scare anybody at this point. So, I mean, obviously, saying that, look, you're going to end up working in a box-making factory, that is not, saying that you're going to be the guy whose job it is to gather pig's blood, that really is a place you don't want to end up. Oh, Scotty's telling me he gave AJ the soft close. Okay, thanks. Thank you.
Always be closing.
Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Mylan.
Yeah. Rick, it seems pretty obvious, pig's blood. It's prom season.
No, we've already made that joke, sir.
Really?
Yeah, we made
it. I missed that joke.
To be fair, it was last hour. To be fair, it was at the beginning when Tim said, it's the best story of the day.
I'm sorry.
Pig's blood spilled. No, and I said, Kerry White, unavailable for comment.
All right. Okay. See?
So carry on.
Occasionally, I allow my job to distract me from your show, and this is the price I pay for it.
You know, there's no need to be snarky about it, Mylan. That's a cool name, by the way. How do you spell that?
M-I-L-E-N.
M-I-L-E-N. That's kind of, is that like a made-up name, or is that a name from somewhere?
It's common in Central Oregon with the Cowboys. I believe they're misspelling Milan.
Interesting. How great that your name comes from a misspelling. There's a lot of those in Utah as well.
Well, that's just a guess.
Hey, here's the... I will give you a prize from the AM970 stack of crap. If you can tell me who, as they were leading up to prom night, said the following phrase about dumping pig's blood on Kerry White. Pig's blood for a pig.
Nancy Allen.
No, it was Sue Snell.
Well... Man, this is just a bad day.
All right. Sorry about that. Thank you.
Bye.
All right. That's Mylan or Milan. Is Milan a cookie? Don't they sell it? No, don't
Milano.
My Pepperidge Farm. Mm. Oh, who wants an answer to the pig's blood thing?
I do.
Wait, was he referring to the actress who played Sue Snell?
This is way too deep for me.
I were kind of mean to him, though. He sounded pretty sad.
I think I may have shafted that guy out of a prize. I was talking about the character. I think he referenced the actress. Now he's going to sue us.
I'll send him a set of knives.
He'll be send him some pig's blood. Now he's going to be like one of those angry, one of those nutcase listeners that stalks Susan Reynolds because they think, not from this station, by the way. I won't reveal who, but a nutcase listener from one of the other radio stations who stalks Susan Reynolds because they think that they deserve
what was
a prize
name that
they didn't get. Nancy Allen.
Nope, it's Amy Irving.
In your face, it was Amy Irving who played Sue Snell.
No prize.
Yeah, no prize for you, Mylan. I was nice to him. I told him he had a nice name.
Mm.
I'm just letting him know that that pop culture reference was made an hour ago. That's all I'm saying. Hey, Bob, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick, what's up?
What's up? How you doing?
Well, you know, hanging in there.
This audience is so sad today. He's waiting to die.
I am down here in a...
Go for a walk in the woods.
Wonderful woodbird. Anyway, during my travels, I pick up, pig parts from, places that make pig parts. And part of their deal is the pig bloods come in 12-ounce containers. And what they do with this pig blood
like
is they make freaking cheese out of it, right?
No, they don't. They don't make cheese out of pig's
blood.
They
make cheese out of pig's blood, and they cure it in, like, skulls and stuff like that. I'm serious. Now, the Vietnamese community.
Well, okay, but not cheese, not like my cheese.
Yeah, they call it head cheese.
Okay.
I'm serious. I asked the guy, what do you do with the pig's blood? They make cheese out of it. The Vietnamese up in Tacoma, Seattle, and all that.
All right. Well, let's stop. First of all, there's just so much in this call to work with. In my travels, I collect pig parts from places that make pig parts.
Out in Dayton, there's a place that... Yeah.
Sure. Pig parts, waffle irons, whatever you need. You come in, I have everything you need. Waffle irons, pig parts, lampshades, couches. Head cheese is not cheese as we know it, though.
No, it's not something that would appeal
head
to the
cheese is just like a meat. Head cheese is like a sausage, more than anything. It's like a gelatinous sausage.
I really wouldn't know.
No, I'm telling you this.
Asked the guy what they do with the pig's blood.
Uh-huh.
And he says they make cheese out of it. No. They cure it in skulls.
Skulls?
Which is real evil, I think. It's real kind of spooky.
They cure it in skulls.
Yeah.
Oh, they said from an Indiana Jones movie.
I was just going to say, was this guy named Kali? Was he living in a cave somewhere with a bunch of children mining for him? All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. Great show ever, Rick.
Thank you. I appreciate that. See you in hell, Kali. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What do they do with pig blood?
Yeah, Rick, I own a nursery. They make organic fertilizer. They call it blood meal.
Blood meal. This show just gets more appetizing by the moment. They make, garden fertilizer out of pig's blood.
Yeah, they dry it, and it's called blood meal.
Powdered pig's blood. Who wants some powdered pig's blood?
So you dry it and then make it powder?
It's like some hideous pixie stick. It's a pig sea stick.
No.
Oh, Rick Emerson. So they dry it, and then they make it into fertilizer.
Yeah, it's just a powdery, flaky substance when they're done with it.
Why pig's blood?
Because one thing, they try to use every part of the pig.
Yeah,
and what's left over, they can sell it. So, blood meal is an organic way to obtain certain micro and macro nutrients to add to your fertilizer, or add to your ground.
I really honestly didn't know that. All right, thank you, sir.
All right, bye.
All right, thanks so much. Okay.
Scientists work tirelessly on these things.
I guess. I mean, who can say we don't learn things on this program? All right, here's Tim Riley.
Well, it's over. Reese Witherspoon and Jake Gyllenhaal have ended their months-long affair. According to Witherspoon's people, she has either called it off or is just taking a break. She cares about Jake, but the timing is crappy. She doesn't have enough emotional space for him right now.
I don't have enough emotional space for you right now.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So she needs to empty that out.
empty out your space right now, woman. So there you go. So Sarah, Jake Gyllenhaal is once again available for you.
A Texas man is dead after authorities say he was beaten by an angry crowd following a traffic accident. Police in Austin believe two or three men started beating David Rivas Morales. When the car in which he was riding, he was just riding, struck a 4-year-old girl in a parking lot. Austin Police Commander Howard Pitt says up to 5 people could be charged with his murder.
Well, at least for the one involved in the final part of the assault will be a homicide, and then we'll have to look at the others and try and make a determination as to what part they played in this assault before we make those decisions.
I didn't watch the video, but apparently there's a video of this where this guy was just a passenger,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, passenger, not the driver.
He's a passenger, and I'm not trying to minimize the incident, but he's just a passenger. The car, horribly bad accident. Hits a child, you know, terrible thing.
And non-life-threatening injuries.
Oh, I said the kid's not dead?
No.
Well,
where is
the passenger is dead. The kid's alive. planet is so effed up.
What,
I thought, why did I think it was like in Wisconsin? Okay, it's in Texas.
Yeah.
And so the car strikes somebody, but apparently doesn't even hurt them all that badly. And so, of course, the immediate response is to pull out not the driver, the passenger, and beat him to death in the street. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
So that's what happens.
Does it seem like this country is like one big children's top that's just spinning out of control more and more by the day? Maybe it just feels that way. Maybe it's not actually that way, but it does really seem like we are, Tim Riley, we are on the eve of destruction, is what we are, as Barry McGuire would say.
Yes.
This guy says, my wife is Vietnamese. No, they don't. Knock it off. Okay, sorry. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, let's talk about Beverly Hills 90210 alumni Jenny Garth. She is downplaying reports that she is joining Dancing with the Stars. In Touch magazine, they claim that the actress was going to compete in the upcoming fifth edition of the show, but Garth says there is no such definite plan yet.
I didn't say if I was going to be on it or if I wasn't going to be on it, but it's something that I would be so excited to do if I were given the opportunity, and I love the show, so I would love to do it.
Who wants to decipher that? That's a whole lot of I'm doing nothing.
David
I'm
worked his whole life to make it happen. That's where David's at. That's a good thing.
It makes my head itch.
I don't know. I haven't danced in a good 20 some odd years, so I'm not really sure.
Okay, that is where she's unemployed, sitting around, doing nothing, trying to get the job. That's a whole lot of, well, I wouldn't say no if they asked me. I'm just sitting at home. I'm over Jenny Garth. There was a shelf life of my love for Jenny Garth. I'm past her now. I no longer care what Jenny Garth does or doesn't do. Let's see. Greg, you're on the Rick Emerson Show about pig's brains. Hello.
Yes, 11 to Lancus and brag about it. Anyway, hello?
What?
Okay, sorry. There's an old Midwestern favorite. Swear to God, this is no lie. It's called Stoppel God, and it's ground up pig's brain. Yeah, I saw my dad make it when I was a kid. He sawed a pig's head in half.
Jim, are you listening to all this?
I don't want to pick up my headphones. This is a lunch hour.
All right.
Anyway, you grind it up, and you mix it with other, like, beef portions or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, snouts, what have you.
You
spread it out in a cake pan. I swear to God, it's like spread out like a flat cake in a cake pan, and you bake it, and you cut it in little squares, and it's like soft.
And then you give it to children on Halloween.
It's so disgusting.
Yes, I would.
Yeah. It actually tastes pretty good. I've actually had a carnitas burrito at Ole Ole where you actually get little overtones of it. That's the only thing close I've ever tasted to it. But, anyway, have a good one.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that. Okay, you can put your headphones back on. He's done. He's gone. The bad caller went away, Tim. So, okay. I know we need the break.
I think we do.
They ought to sell a meat product just called What Have You. I'll have a big bag of whatnot. What is this? Well, let's see.
Well, all right.
It's a big brick of pork What Have You. All right. It's 12:35, unbelievably. And when we come back, the rest of the story. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Jesus. All right. We're in the lunch hour, believe it or not. We come back more from Tim Riley later on Jim Roop about the Summer of Love. Top five songs stolen from other songs. Gordon Fatboy. The Sarah Dillon bathroom use mystery continues. And more of your phone calls. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. The Rick Emerson Show live from Portland, 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, Jim Roop, top five, Court and Fatboy. Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Headline New Zealand. Authorities there have blanked couples plan to officially name their new son For Real, with the numeral 4 and small R-E-A-L, saying numerals are not allowed. Pat and Sheena Wheaton said they decided to name their new baby For Real shortly after having an ultrasound and being struck with the reality by his impending arrival. Most of us, when we try to figure out what our names mean, we have to look it up in the baby book. But when the parents filed for names with New Zealand's Registry of Births, Deaths, and Marriages, they were told names beginning with a number were against the law. Also rejected are names like Satan and Adolf Hitler.
Sorry. I didn't... That was sort of... That really was like a... Now you know the rest of the story final sentence that I didn't see coming. The best thing about that is it implies that there's been like... That that's case law that came out of like a given situation. Like there was somebody who attempted to... What should we name him? Lester? Satan. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or Adolf. Do you ever think about this? Here's another thing I think about. I think about whether anyone at all in Germany names their son Adolf now.
I think that's illegal.
It's not illegal.
I believe it is illegal, yes.
To name your son Adolf? Uh-huh. Not Adolf Hitler.
Adolf is illegal.
That's ridiculous. It's not illegal to name your son Adolf, I say, as though I'm an expert on Deutschland. Really? You think it's illegal in Germany to name your kid Adolf?
I believe so, yes.
I know it's illegal to have those little those S's that look like lightning bolts. That's why if you ever see a Kiss album, if you ever see one of the Kiss albums from Germany, the S's look like Z's instead because they're not allowed to have the little lightning bolt because it's like the looks like the SS. Well, somebody will tell us about that. I mean, even as nutty as Germany sort of is about that kind of stuff, because Germany really is, they really are pretty sensitive about that whole thing. That is kind of a sore subject with them, that whole trying to...
Anything goes in Germany except that.
Trying to... Well, that's the weirdest thing. It's like you look
at... I mean, you can hang somebody by their heels and, you know, beat them with something. It's fine.
I know.
Don't name your kid Adolf.
What is this? Well, it's a huge woman covered in pig's blood jumping up and down nude on top of mice while having sex with a midget riding a unicycle, balancing Rupert Holmes on one knee. I mean, but I want to have these little lightning bolts in my band's logo. No, you will go to prison. All right. Oh man. Speaking of which, speaking of going to prison, do we have the Tom Sizemore audio or video that's apparently floating around? Sarah, have you seen anything about this?
No.
Apparently, this is according to our friend Seamus in Colorado. He started crying like a bitch in court yesterday when they said...
Oh, I heard about it. We had the story on it, but we didn't have the video.
Yeah. Apparently, he's only tough when beating on women. So they sentenced him to jail, and apparently he began crying like a pussy, which is fantastic. In your face, you big bastard. Let's see here. Wait, hold on. Hi, Tom, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Have you a Nazi answer for us?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I had a friend... Apparently, Adolf was a relatively common name in Germany back in the day. And when I was a kid growing up in the 60s, my friend's dad was named Adolf.
Now, was he from Germany?
Yeah.
Well, but that would predate Hitler, though.
Yeah, but he had been in the German army. He claimed he wasn't a Nazi, but he was in the German army.
Well, they all claim that. The Pope tried to claim that he wasn't in the Hitler Youth for a while, but then until those photographs come out.
Yeah, the older sister was born in Germany, and my friend had come over in, a couple years later, so just in that time, he was born in America.
Interesting. All right, thank you, sir.
Right, bye.
All right. Hey, you know, that's a... So, yeah, that predates... Well, you know that it's like they say that one of the most popular names... I don't know if it's true or not. They say one of the most popular names in certain sections of the Muslim world is, you know, it's like Osama or whatever. So you know that probably during Hitler's sort of, in his, I don't want to call it Hitler's glory days, but you know when he was empowered, when Hitler was, when things were going well for him, there were probably a ton of kids named Adolf, sort of an honor to their leader or whatever, you know. So now, it's just interesting. It's just one of those things. Here's another thing. Well, never mind.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, does it seem like, Hitler didn't have any kids.
No.
Because there was the story that he only had the one. He didn't have both the, his, you know how sometimes a glass is half empty? Mm-hmm. Apparently the sack, it was like a half, you can view the sack as half full or half empty. It is half empty. So I don't think there were any kids. But he did have relatives, didn't he?
Yeah.
Didn't he have like nieces or cousins
or
something?
Cousins, yeah.
So like, where are they? Like,
probably be dead by now. Due to old age, I would imagine.
Well, I suppose. If they had kids, mm-hmm. I mean, do they all change their name?
I would imagine so.
They're like a Franz and Liesel Hitler out there somewhere. And that must be an awkward exchange when you go to the German name registry to change it. Okay, I'm here to change my name. Philip, what is your name now?
Hilton.
I was going to say. Yes, him. Hilter. Let me write it down myself. No, I need to write it down for the form. What is your name? John. That's got to be, that's embarrassing. That's a conversation you want to have. You want to go in close to the end of business. Close to the close of business, as they say. Here's Tim Ryan.
A future ruler of the British Empire turned 25 today, Prince William, and he gets $13 million from his mother's trust, but he can only have between $500,000 and $600,000 a year.
Aww.
It is too bad, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, it happened accidentally, but it could be the next big summertime thing for adults anyway. A restaurant in Alexandria, Virginia, has put out frozen beer, just like a popsicle. It's on menus for customers of legal drinking age to enjoy. Frank Morales, the chef, explained how we came up with the idea. If you're putting a warm beer in the freezer to get cold, imagine that.
Yeah, he's a genius.
I forgot about it. I took it out, it was frozen, and I started to shave it, and I started to eat it, and it was phenomenal.
Comments? I have no comments. I have no comments.
They can be used in a wide variety.
I don't know. All I remember is one time when I was a kid, my dad was like, you know, he had sent me like into the house to get him a beer. And for some reason, like, I guess there was beer in the fridge, but I didn't know that. And so there was some beer that was, like, sitting out of the storage room or whatever. And so that was, I didn't know there was already cold beer in the fridge, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I'm, like, five. I didn't know any better. So I'm getting him, like, so I get, like, a room temperature beer out of the storage room at our house. And I pour it into a glass and, like fill the glass full of ice. And then I pour the beer in, which, who knew? You do it with soda. You do it with it. My parents did with wine. I don't think normal civilized people do that with wine. Do civilized people put ice in their wine?
I don't believe so.
No, if you're drinking like a white wine that's warmer than you want, you could toss a couple cubes in there.
My parents never met a thing they couldn't put ice cubes in. Mom, my milk is warm. Have some ice.
Well, you know I'm not classy or sophisticated anyway.
Well, I'm just saying I didn't know, but I filled a glass full of ice and then poured a beer into it, and I thought my dad was going to beat me into next week. Seriously, for putting ice in the beer. I had no idea that it was like the worst thing on earth you could do. Let's see. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Is it 12:52 already?
It is, yes.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
All right.
What was that about?
I don't really know. But I like it. I think it should be an exciting new trend. A random time check. Let's see. Rick, please be telling me where I can find the video of the fat chick jumping on mice. Sounds hot. Okay. Well, let's see. Who wants to hear a Hitler email?
Oh, I do.
Hitler?
From Hitler?
We did two things at
the same time. Hitler at yahoo.com.
My interests include genocide, candlelight dinners, Hitler.
I barely knew her.
All right. Let's see. Apparently, well, I knew this. I knew that he had a niece that he was apparently overly fond of.
Hilda
Hitler. It bugs me that we still, now look, I'm just saying, I know this audience, as yesterday's reptile discussion will show, and today's, look, in the first hour of the show, we figured out the biodiesel thing, the little smoky thing, and whether dogs are right or left-handed. This business of whether it's illegal to name your kid Adolf in Germany is really going to eat at me until we figure it out. So, and we figured out the mobile bike repair thing, although apparently the guy can't come. What is the point of a mobile bike repair service if I can't have it now? What is the point of any product or service in America?
What's the point of him calling if you couldn't do it today?
Seriously.
I mean, God love you, sir, and you got your little plug-in, but come on.
That's what I'm saying.
Come on.
I'm an American. If there's a good or service available, I want it now. I don't want it tomorrow. Could I be more Veruca Salt? I want a squirrel and mobile bike repair. Blah, 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 Hitler. All right, here's Tim Riley.
So apparently he has Irish relatives.
Who?
Still alive.
Hitler?
Yeah.
Hitler was an Irish.
The old Hitlers.
The Hitleries. Hitleries, but it's spelled with like a G-H.
All right. That according to the internets.
He has relatives in Ireland?
Yeah.
Well, that didn't even make it. The old Hitlers. That should be a sitcom. The old Hitlers.
No, you think of the McHitlers.
The McHitler is something else. Did you know, I've made this observation before, did you know that there is a McDonald's, I believe, in the town of Auschwitz?
Yeah, there is.
Which is just, I mean, seriously, you want to talk about things that just, I know that life has to go on and so forth, but you want to talk about something that just seems heinously inappropriate. I mean, on just like every level. All right, let's see. Well, all right, here's Tim Riley. Or are you just still busy looking at Hitler? That's something you want on the CBS servers. Well, you've got one employee who seems to spend most of his time looking up Nazis and information on Adolf Hitler.
He's startling with the light hair and eyes.
Yeah, we've got a really white, light-skinned, blonde-haired employee who spends a lot of time researching Hitler on company time.
The only Aryan member of the staff.
He is. You have this one employee of European descent who spends a lot of time researching Germany.
Well, okay. Summer has arrived in America today. I guess an only American. No one else gets it except for us. And that means that folks are looking to cool off in swimming pools. Unfortunately, pools are sometimes a source of illness. Linda Goodner of the National Consumers League says swimmers need to use common sense before jumping in.
Look at the water. Make sure it's clean, clear, and blue. Check the tiles to see that they feel smooth and clean.
It's National What Day?
Also, the smell. Make sure there are no strong odors.
It's the first day of summer in America.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But nowhere else. We get summer first.
Summer.
Linda offers more common sense tips for swimmers.
Don't go in with diarrhea. Make sure that you're taking a baby in the pool. You change diapers often.
Thanks.
Take your children to the bathroom several times so that they can practice good hygiene.
Jesus God. Don't go into the pool with diarrhea.
Who would have thought?
Who says to them, never mind. And if there are any suspicious odors. All right.
Jesus.
All right. Well, today's first day of summer. Does that mean that after today, all the days are shorter?
I believe so.
Isn't that the deal? Today's the solstice?
Thank you for not saying shorter.
Shorter?
You're getting a little out of control with the earth today.
I know. Does that mean, though, that after today, all the days are shorter?
Yes.
Okay. Right?
Yes.
I don't know.
Isn't today
Why
the longest?
Why are you looking at us?
Because this is, we know.
It is the longest day
today
of the year.
Today is the longest day of the year.
All right.
That's why we want everyone to go jump in the swimming pool.
So everybody, unless you have explosive diarrhea, or you're wearing a diaper of some kind.
Maybe your name is Hitler.
No, and my wife is going to, because she's a stinking hippie, my wife is going to a solstice party. I won't be going, by the way. She's going to some solstice party.
What happens there? People dance around the maypole?
Seriously. They sit around and they talk about the man and, you know.
Which man?
I don't know. And they're eating a lot of Argentinian beef. And I don't know how that works because she's a vegan and whatnot right now. So she, later on, she's like, oh, do you want? She knew better than to ask me. She's like, so I'm going to this solstice party on Saturday. And I'm like, have fun, which is my response. That's sort of my simultaneous, like, you know, have a great time, and also my passive way of indicating that I will not be going. So she's like, yeah, this weekend I've got a solstice party, and I, without even looking up from what I was reading, I said, have a great time. And later, she revealed that it was the barbecuing hit a lot of things, and she later changed it. She changed it from being a solstice party to being, quote, an Argentinian beef party. Which, and I don't know why that's so hilarious, but it just is. I know that's like a blanket party. Scotty, how do you feel about line two? Like on a scale of 1 to 5 in terms of appropriateness. It's an 11. Hi, yeah. John.
Hey, how's it going, Rick?
Hi, now.
1 o'clock already, my God.
Thank you. You have a joke to share with us?
Yes, I do.
I'm going to give you a second to think about whether or not you want to tell the joke. Hold on. Hold on a second. Hold on. But actually, before I do anything else, let me just one second here.
All right. Come
Wait,
on, Rick.
Hold on. Now, is this a joke about Germany?
Yes, it was.
All right, then.
It is.
All day. If it's a joke, it's a joke about Germany. All right. I'm going to let you ponder it for a second.
Jews harp.
See how I wasn't gonna be so on the nose about it. I was gonna let people make that connection. All right. Yes. What is yes, sir. What is the? Do you still want to tell the joke?
It's a cute joke. You like it?
It's a cute.
Germany is the land of the cute joke.
It's a cute little Nazi joke. Go ahead.
How do little German boys have the shoelaces? In little Nazis.
Okay.
That was all. Thanks, love it.
Thank you. Hey, good night. All right. Okay, that's funny.
That was a cute German joke.
It was. It was
German jokes for kids.
Okay. Here's Jim Riley.
More German jokes coming up in just a little while. Well, now that summer is here, it's time to put down those video games and go outside to play.
Okay. Is that a directive?
Yeah, that according to Felicia Stuhler. She has a recipe for curbing your childhood obesity, and she says parents need to lead by example. Here's
at a young age, start nurturing that love for being outdoors and physical activity and play time. And instead of scooting the kids in front of a TV for babysitting, taking the kids outside and doing things with them, or going to a park or a playground.
Yes, be tough on older children. Get them outside and away from the television.
Find ways to have fun with them outdoors. Get them outdoors, whether it be skating or cycling or skateboarding.
I like the soundbite where it seems like the interviewer got tired of it and just turned off the tape recorder while she was in mid-response. We'll get this Tanya Harding call in a second. Oh, she's here? No, but no, we're not getting email from Hitler or calls from Tanya. Okay, well, this is frustrating. If this line three was, went to school with Hitler's distant cousin, and then I go and he's gone. All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Hey, good to hear your voice again. I was in Hawaii the last week.
Yes, sir.
So I have a Tanya Harding update.
Okay. What is the update, sir?
If you don't mind.
No, none at all.
I missed your show, by the way, so I'm back. There's a show on TV over there, and it's called Good Morning Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. We don't get that here.
Of course not. the host is Branscombe Richards, and he had Tanya as a guest last week.
On Good Morning Hawaii? For what possible reason?
Well, that's what my wife and I, we were in bed together. That's as far as I'll tell you about that. But we were watching, and all of a sudden she comes on the TV, and the update is she is racing Model Ts in your old home area, the Bonneville salt flats. And she looked like hell, Rick.
I don't know which part of this call to tackle first.
That
first of all, the concept
doing.
Of
that's
racing Model
TV
Ts.
Last week.
Racing Model Ts, like the Tin Lizzie, the Henry Ford car?
Yeah, and she said they go up to 114 miles an hour.
No, they don't. That's a lie.
And she looked like hell. I mean, she looked terrible. She was
like
overweight.
You keep going back to really? No. You keep going back to that part. And she looked like hell. And the idea that you would need the Bonneville Salt Flats, and if you haven't seen the Bonneville Salt Flats, that is where Will Smith is dragging the alien in Independence Day. And it's just a vast expanse of absolutely perfectly flat landscape that goes on forever. That's where they do if you have cars that have jet engines, that's really the only place they can race them, because it's just hundreds and thousands of square miles of just absolutely flat surface with no... You know, there's nothing.
There's no end in sight.
Nothing you're going to hit. Yeah, it's absolutely flat.
I know. I lived in Salt Lake City. I used to go watch, you know, the speed trials there.
Yeah.
But why is she still popular, you know, and doing stuff like this?
Who's racing Model Ts, and how far down the list of people did they have to go before they got to the idea that Tanya Harding should somehow do it?
Well, we were just shocked because they had all these great stars on the show, and then they brought her on.
Who were the other great stars?
Well, I don't remember. You know,
Dun Ho. No.
Yeah, right. He's gone.
He is? Where'd he go?
But the fact of the matter that here she is,
yeah,
looking like heck.
So now, would you say that it was it in your opinion, is it just her appearance the problem? Is it just a...
It's all the above, Rick.
I was just going to say...
You know, she's such a loser, and, excuse me, you probably dated her once, but in your single days.
Is it just that she's put on weight? Or does she just look bad
in
general?
Well, she has the hairstyle, you know, with those little bangs in front.
Yeah.
You know, and the ponytail in back, she's trying to look, and she's got to be in her late 30s, early 40s, but she looks like hell. And my wife says, why are they interviewing her? She has no interest anymore with anybody,
yeah.
Right?
No, it is interesting. Well, all right. Well,
anyway, they have a website. It's goodmorninghawaii.net, I think, like that. But look it up, and it was us. It was last... Tuesday morning.
All right. Thank you, sir.
You'll be shocked.
All right. I'll look into it. And then no goodbye. He's just gone. No goodbye. He strikes and then he sinks back into the night. Now people are sending me German jokes.
Are they in German?
Yeah. Yes, the articles are all the articles are all backward with the nouns. All right, here's we got a break. We got Roop, right? All right, but then we have more news from Tim Riley, don't we?
Yes, we do.
All right, you sound so defeated about it.
I suppose.
We got lots of news today. We're just so behind us. The news is just stacking up left and right. All day it's been stacking up. All week it's been in piles. So we got more news on the way. Jim Roop on the way. Top five songs stolen from other songs. And later on, a thing that I was going to tease, and now I've forgotten what it is. Oh, Fat Boy's going to be important. Fat Boy's what? You say there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. Rick Emerson radio program. Pardon me, I'm finishing my coffee. There we go. All right, just a moment. We talked to Jim Roop. Later on, the top five. Fat Boy from Courtney. Fat Boy is going to join us here. And we have more of Tim Riley ahead as well. This is for Jesse. Let me just do a little. Jesse, this is for you, sir.
In the lion's den.
Go, ladies and gentlemen, from Los Angeles,
CNN radio correspondent James Roop.
Hello, sir.
Howdy.
Hi. What's up with you, brother man?
Not much. Just hanging out with Phil Spector.
Really? No, you're not really.
No. I did run into him in the bathroom a few weeks ago.
Really? Is that true? You never told me that, you bastard.
I'm surprised I didn't.
Oh, no. I'd remember if you'd run into Phil Spector in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Was he alone?
Yeah.
Was he crazy? I mean, did he do anything crazy?
No, he just... Pete and Les.
Well, okay.
As I did.
Is he the most famous person you have shared bathroom time with?
Most notorious at this point, yes.
I don't think I've ever been in the bathroom or shared the bath. Let's go around the room. Has anybody here ever been in the bathroom, engaged in some kind of business at the same time as anybody else? Sarah, go.
Alanis Morissette.
Oh, that's right. You used the toilet right after her.
Mm-hmm.
It was still warm.
Yes, it's true.
Did she flush?
She did.
But
and she let the lights on.
Really? And did the air smell scented and wonderful?
You know, I didn't. I make it a habit not to breathe in deeply when I'm in the bathroom.
Right after somebody else has left, you go to just.
That's strong.
All right, Tim Riley,
Michael Eisner.
Really?
Yeah.
The Michael Eisner?
Yeah.
At the where?
Disney guy?
May I ask where this was? This wasn't Disney, was it?
In Scottsdale, it was a screening for Beauty and the Beast for a focus group. I worked on the promotion thing.
And Michael Eisner was there, and you were in the bathroom.
Yeah, I had to make sure that nobody left the room before Michael Eisner did, so I had to lock people in to watch Beauty and the Beast. And a lot of it was just still drawings. Were the animals just smiling for like 30 seconds and not moving?
You're going to see a temp score, and by the way, nothing is done. Genius. All right, excellent. Well, is he a weird-looking man in person? He looks like they might make up him a lot for television.
No, he just looked like Michael Eisner. Big, tall guy.
All right. I have never been in the bathroom at the same time as anybody, I don't think. A friend of mine was in the bathroom right next to Steve Ballmer from Microsoft, but that's about it. All right.
Happens all the time when I'm at an award show or something.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So you must get that a lot, where you're there, and you don't, you probably, is it awkward? Like, because you don't want to look over. Like, you don't want to look over.
If you look the guy in the eye, it's cool. You don't want to be, you don't want your eyes wandering.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, you have to peripherally know where his eyes are. If it's a taller guy or shorter guy.
It's true.
You don't want to be searching for his eyes.
I guess that is true, because then it's a whole lot of, because then it's inevitably going to be, Tom Sizemore or Shaquille O'Neal or somebody, and they're going to pound you into dust.
Yeah, you don't want that.
That's okay. Hey, by the way, have you heard, and I haven't seen the video, but apparently it's floating around, Tom Sizemore crying like a woman.
I've seen him cry
several times.
Really?
Outside the courtroom.
Oh,
yeah.
F that guy, man. I hope he just gets pounded in
the
sand.
It's like a woman. It really is.
I didn't mean to do it. You don't understand me.
I didn't mean to be a serial domestic abusing a-hole.
It's crazy.
I mean, come on. I mean, what is, you know, I made this observation yesterday about that guy. I think that when they were, when souls or spirits up in the great beyond or heaven or whatever it is, wherever it is that the universe assembles things, that guy was classified incorrectly. He really was meant to be some sort of animal. I mean, I just don't think he was meant to be in the human line. And I think he cut lines or got miscategorized. He was really supposed to be like a baboon, or maybe some sort of a lizard somewhere. And he inadvertently got put in the human. He just doesn't.
Yeah, he'd be a reptile, I think.
Yeah, he just doesn't seem like a guy who fits in with human beings. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right. Well, in any event, so there's somebody. But apparently, yesterday in court, he was like, "We sentence you to, you know, whatever, whenever it was."
Oh yeah, he cries all the time, man.
Well, screw that guy. F him. Let's see what else. I know we're talking about Summer of Love here in a second, but now I should tell you this. I'm not going to pretend to be better than I am or to be above such things. I am all about pandering to the lowest common denominator, even that lowest common denominator within myself. I do have a copy of the O.J. Simpson book.
You do?
I do. I do indeed, sir. I have a copy of If I Did It.
Is it a manuscript or is it the actual?
It is a scanned. It is a hand scanned version, scanned and encoded version.
Good Lord.
Of the actual book, which is floating around on the. It's now on the interwebs, as George Bush would say. It's floating around out there. Very clearly the real deal, though. I mean, it's obviously the real thing. Having compared some sections of it to sections that were sort of revealed in the press and whatever. And anyway, and there was a big article about it on, an article on CNN or CNN it might have been, or Fox News, someplace. Anyway, they were talking about how it was leaked under the internet. And sure enough, I looked and, there it was. But first of all,
did you have to pay to get that?
I didn't. I did not. It had been posted on, and the link was gone when I went back to it. But some guy had stuck it up on his website. He's like, "Hey, here's a link to that leaked version of the O.J. Simpson book everybody's talking about."
Very nice.
If you're interested as a journalist, I can point you in that direction. Or hook you up with that as a journalistic endeavor if you're interested at all.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Because that is probably a thing that's going to be a sort of a story in the next couple of days, because that now deflates this attempt by the Goldmans, to publish their own version of it, which I know that they were going to put out like a killer's confession or whatever they were going to call it, and then they were going to take the money. It deflates any attempt by O.J. really to try to make any substantial amount of money off of it at some point in the future. I have a couple observations about it. A, you can really obviously tell it's ghostwritten. I mean, we knew it was. But, I mean, written, as I said, O.J. Simpson, if you see any amount of interviews with him, was not blessed with an extensive vocabulary, in my experience. And the book is just written
That's
like...
That's very kind of you, Bob.
Yeah, just this perfect sparkling verbiage in the book. The book has the absolute ring of truth to it, though, in that when he is describing, and there's several chapters where... He doesn't come right out and say that Nicole was asking for it, but there are a lot of chapters where Sizemore-like, he does sort of give his version of how Nicole, kind of pushed and prodded him and really was, obstinate and stubborn and difficult and whatever, and, clearly trying to paint her as some crazy lady, which maybe she was, maybe she wasn't, I don't know. But the book all has the absolute ring of somebody who believes everything he's saying, until you get to that chapter called The Night in Question, which is, where he describes the actual killings. And that's the part of the book that rings false, because he does that old trick where he says, basically, suddenly everything went black. And then when the next thing I knew, I was standing outside and there were some dead bodies on the ground and I didn't know how they got there. I mean, he totally paints this whole thing of like going to some haze and then not realizing it. And he claims that there was some other party there with him who he calls Charlie, and that part just rings so totally false that he's either consciously lying about it or has just convinced himself over time that he doesn't remember what happened or whatever. So
it reminds me of a kid I grew up with in school. We used to call him Mile Away, because I swear to you, no matter what happened, he was always a mile away.
Yes, there is. I have no idea. It was all...
That's the truth. That guy, he was a... He'd screw us up. It wasn't me. I was a mile away at the time.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And I'll read you this one little segment here, and then we'll talk about this the summer love thing, which I do, which is kind of fascinating to me too. Anyway, he said he's talking about, and I won't read into the graphic sections, but he's talking about how he looks down and there, Ron and Nicole, and they have both been killed. And he said it didn't seem real. Says the book, none of it computed. What the F happened here? Who had done this? And why? And where the F was I when all of this S went down? It's like part of my life was missing, like there was some weird gap in my existence. As though this sounds at all like it's something OJ would say. But how could that be? I was standing right there. What happened? And blah, 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 blah. You know, and then he goes on, and then he talks about the ride with Al Cowlings and the Bronco and everything, and then all of that sounds exactly like the guy who was there. This whole part about the killings, though, sounds like there's just so many paints, so many coatings and layers of gloss that have been put over the event. Anyway, so it's out there on the net. There were 400,000 copies, I guess, issued. One of them ended up in the News Corp vault. One of them ended up on eBay, but this one was apparently scanned by some employee at a bookstore and then made
it. That must have taken forever.
Yeah, made it to a guy. And it's now on the net, and it is very clearly the real thing. If it's not real, then it's pretty stunningly close to the real thing. So I'll get in touch. I got your email address. So
yeah,
I'll let
cool.
you know more about that.
Great.
All right. Well, Summer of Love. So you're doing this. I don't know if you know how they're positioning this. It says here on the prep sheet: music, drugs, and free love. Who better than CNN Radio's Jim Roop to cover this?
They know me well.
Yes, it is true. It is the 40th anniversary of the Summer of Love. Now, was that term a media creation, or was that like, did the Summer of Love, was that named that by people at the time? Where did that phrase even come from?
It was an after-the-fact kind of phrase, and it really came from that song by Scott McKenzie, San Francisco.
Right, right.
Know? Because it says there'll be a love in there, and that was what it was all about. It was promoting the Monterey Pop Festival, which was the first at that time, the first major outdoor rock festival, and so they wanted a big love in at the Monterey Pop Festival that year. But that song sort of became adopted, you know, as the song for the Summer of the Love In, which then became the Summer of Love.
And then you've got this, it says you are talking about the Summer of Love, because this is a big thing, like CNN's got a whole thing about this.
Really?
The Summer of Love, and it says there are 7 network-length stories and a podcast covering all angles of the Summer of Love and its legacy. I mean, its legacy has basically just been, from my perspective, its legacy has just been that it's something that baby boomers remind me about constantly. in a constant stream of hectoring lectures about how music and everything was better when they were growing up than it is now. So, I mean,
well, that's what these folks really believe. Now, there are some who are still, in my opinion, the true hippies, the 65-year-old true hippies. Still, because they use this word, the human potential. A lot of them use that phrase because they believe that something that whatever that phenomenon was that summer can happen again. It's a cyclical thing. You know, the music gets depressing, then it gets positive,
right,
then it gets militant, then it gets progressive, then it gets philosophical. And so all of that happens, and when several of those collide into one, which is what happened that particular summer, and at that generation, you get this feeling that, well, maybe love can get us through it.
Yeah.
Love and a lot of drugs.
I was just going to say, the best part is how we both just laugh. That's our instant response.
I can't help but laugh when they say that. And then I get them to admit, well, everybody's pretty stoned,
Well, I mean, that's the other thing. It's like that old joke about the Grateful Dead. You know, like what does a Grateful Dead fan say when his drugs run out? Boy, this band sucks, And I mean, I guess when you are high, and I'm not trying to trivialize everything that happened in the '60s, but I mean, when you're high, everything does seem probably brighter and shinier and happier, and everything's
depending upon what you're fed, meaning what's going into your brain,
sure,
at the time or before you take those drugs. Because if you go into a situation where, hey, man, take this, everything will be beautiful.
And it does seem like there was a confluence of two things. Well, three, if you count the drugs, which is that there was rock and roll, which I really honestly, as corny as this sounds, I really do believe that, you know, rock music in a very real way did change the world only because it was everything, because rock and roll at that point in American society really was like this sort of cultural jailbreak, because it was sexual relations, it was race relations, it was generational relations. Rock in a very real way helped to create, if not widen if not create, the generation gap.
Yes.
So it was that, and then of course it was the civil rights movement. And it was those two things, fueled maybe by drugs, that created sort of...
And the fear of the Vietnam War.
Yeah, well, that's true. That too, obviously. So, I mean, it really was sort of this conflation of, I don't know, numerous things that probably won't happen again. And every generation, and I say this as somebody who saw my own generation already try to do this a couple of times, where later generations, as much as we feel compelled to make fun of hippies and baby boomers, I've seen my generation two or three times try to artificially create something like that vibe again.
Yeah.
You know, where they try to mimic Woodstock, or they'll try to mimic a lot of the sort of naturally occurring anti-war stuff that happened at that time, or musically they try to recreate those moments. And it's just sort of pathetic. That was like a real organic thing that just sort of happened. Nobody planned that.
I really thought that MTV was going to be able to do that back when they had that first big concert of theirs.
Right, right.
Was that in 80 or 85, something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Well, like the Live Aid kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That first one.
Yeah.
You know, I put all 7 hours on a video cassette, man, when it was happening, because I thought it was great. But that died very quickly. You know, that there was no legacy after it was over.
Well, I think, and at the risk of sounding, I don't know, at the risk of sounding like some big bleeding heart about it, I think as soon as people figured out how to monetize something, that's when it can no longer happen. Because that's the whole thing you hear about at Woodstock, right? Is that Woodstock, they sold tickets to what, like 20,000 people or something. And then you ended up with like 350,000 people just gate crashing,
yeah,
basically, you know. And so that's, you know, but that never was allowed to happen again. The idea that it just sort of grew out of their control. But that, you know, they only let that, I hate to use the phrase the system, but I mean, they only let that happen once. And then from then on, they keep a tighter grip on that sort of thing. The closest thing there is, and this might seem like a bit of a stretch, the closest thing there is to like a Woodstock, even though that happened 2 years after the Summer of Love, the closest thing there is to like a Woodstock now, as weird as this sounds, is like online file sharing stuff. The idea that there is this weird sort of gathering of people that are sort of beyond the reach of the authorities simply through sheer like group willpower. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, so, I hear you.
When is it, and here's a question. Tim and I were talking about this the other day. Is there a generally agreed upon time when the Summer of Love or the Love Generation sort of ended?
No.
Because for me...
It didn't end. It just sort of faded.
For me, I always kind of pinpoint the Manson thing as sort of being... That was when it all kind of started. That's when it all kind of fell apart.
Yeah, well, right around 69.
Yeah.
You know? I guess is when everything sort of fell apart. But, you know, it's very strange, that area... you know, the Haight-Ashbury district, or the Haight, as they call it. You still got the head shops there and some of the old businesses that were there 40 years ago. And then you got Ben and Jerry's, you know. So there's this real weird feeling when you get there. You can go from 40 years ago into today, and it's almost shocking, which is, I think, one reason why it's a very popular place now. Even, you know, 10 years ago, you wouldn't want to go there.
Is it like a tourist place, though? Does it feel real, or does it feel
it
like...
It does not feel like a tourist place.
It doesn't feel like Little Italy? Because you go to Little Italy, and it's like walking through Disneyland. It just feels so fake.
You'll see people in Bermuda shorts and cameras. I think tourists try and stay away from that area, which is a shame. They shouldn't. If you're going to go to San Francisco, you got to go to the Haight. You have to walk around there and see, you know, where the Grateful Dead...
Sure.
Lived and where Jim Morrison lived above the tobacco shop and all that stuff. I mean, it's really kind of a cool...
Well, it's history. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, and maybe it's a good thing that you don't have a lot of people in Bermuda shorts and cameras walking around there, because it would really, I think, just kill the area. But you got to go. You have to.
Tim has
not that big of an area.
Tim Riley noted that the Summer of Love ended when Mama Cass choked on a ham sandwich. That was really the end. Hey, real quick, we're so over time here. I apologize to you. I'm taking up so much of your time. I know you got other you got things to do, but
nothing as important as this.
God bless you, sir. Are they banning smoking in Beverly Hills?
Yeah.
That's weird, man.
They're gonna wait till September though, because they got a lot of the European tourists that come over in the summer. And these guys smoke like chimneys.
I really, honestly, don't know how I feel about that stuff. I really go back and forth. As much as I like to have opinions and everything, I really honestly go back and forth about those smoking bans. I just don't know what I think.
Well,
about
here, that. here's where I go off on it. It's nobody. If you're going to eat outside, you don't want anybody smoking next to you.
Yeah.
Yet you're going to eat. You're on the street.
Right.
There's cars going by with exhaust fumes.
Right.
You know, in my opinion, go eat inside.
I mean,
let the smokers eat outside.
I mean, like smoking. You know, smoking kills other people than the people who are doing it. But by the same token, it's like I don't like anybody telling me what to do. You know, and I like the government to stay off my back. On the other hand, I don't like the idea that there are people who need a job and so they end up becoming a waitress somewhere and it's basically like working in a Virginia coal mine and they go home with black lung.
Yeah, but until you outlaw the cigarette, you can't ban it.
Well, that's my other thing is like there's this place, there's a great restaurant bar here that I hang out a lot with friends of mine. It was just, you know, it's a place that we all kind of meet and I got friends who smoke and so we'll hang out. And, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day and I'm like, you know, if they got rid of smoking here, that place wouldn't be the same. There are a lot of places I go to where, as dumb as it sounds, a huge part of the vibe is this huge cloud of smoke that hangs on the air.
Yes.
As much as I'm not a smoker, and I've never been a smoker in my life.
Well, it took some getting used to at your listener party for me, because I was not used to being in an area where people are smoking.
Oh, yeah. No, we're all going to die up here. We're all... The clock is ticking on all
of us.
Thank
God for cloves.
It's excellent. Yeah, enjoy the rest of your day, my friend. We will talk to you very soon. James Roof, sir. Thank you. God bless you. There's Jim Roof. Could we be more late? No, I guess the answer is no to that. Tim, do we have more news on the way?
Yes.
What?
I think your mic might work. Let's see.
You sure? No, they check out all the
things that are connected to it. Hello.
Well, now the buttons are just gone. Now there's a big hole in the
here.
Counter.
Sorry, I can still control it over here.
So this microphone still works. Hello.
It does.
All right. Are
it
we
does?
Working on it?
I don't know how that's possible.
Look, Ma. No buttons. Well, we're working on exciting news stories for the people.
We are. We're going to talk about prayers that don't work.
Look at this thing. Prayers, buttons, nothing works. Back after this, kids, and
more German humor.
Well, you want more German humor? Humor. We'll tell. I do have some jokes. We got this guy who's been to the McDonald's Auschwitz. This guy who's met famous people in the bathroom, and the top five songs stolen from other songs. It's all there. Plus Tim Riley right around the corner. You stay there. The Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, Fat Boy from the Court and Fat Boy Show on Rock 101 KUFO. We're going to talk about Lil Bush and the striking resemblance that bears to George W. Bush, boy president. We'll also do the top five songs stolen from other songs. What else? I don't want to tease anything else. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, it's Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Come on. A nationwide phenomenon.
I'm sorry.
What's happening?
You were not really speaking for a minute.
I was not really speaking.
Buttons? I have no buttons.
There's a big hole here in the counter, but that's fine as long as this is working.
All right, let's try it again.
Do you want me to do the new sounder again?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Prayers go unanswered and the priest is still missing. The search for the California priest and his lady friend continues, but they can't find him. And apparently this has become a national story because everybody loves stories about people lost in the Oregon woods. Because you're never found.
Are they white people?
Yes, they are.
That's why we care.
That does
help your chances of the media caring about you, apparently. All right.
So these are nice white people who have vanished. And they came here for the Rose Festival, and they decided to take a brisk walk in the woods and haven't been seen since. So that's a sad thing. Okay, let's laugh a little bit, shall we? A little German humor?
I found some. A little German humor.
A little German humor goes a long way.
All right.
This is a Nazi Jell-O commercial. So let's all listen.
I'm sorry?
A Nazi Jell-O commercial.
Okay.
All right.
Someone has stolen my helmet. What are you doing with it?
The bow was using it to serve the Jell-O.
Such a nice idea.
Silence! How dare you use my helmet for... Jell-O?
The light dessert with fresh fruit taste.
Would you care for a dish?
Now give it a little dream whip on top.
Close, he was talking to me. Besides, you just had a big meal.
There's always room for Jell-O, sir.
With dream whip on top.
It has more than just the flavor of whipped cream.
Sergeant Schultz, eating with the prisoners is absolutely forbidden. Now report to my office. Put more dream whip on it, will you?
Sergeant Schultz, not a word about this to anybody.
So confused by what's going on right now.
Little humor in uniform there.
So, okay.
This place in a Nazi prison camp.
Was that on YouTube?
Yes, it was.
All right. So now, what is... So, was that an actual commercial for Jell-O?
Yes.
And the idea was, because they're wacky Hitler hijinks, the Jell-O... The great thing about that is...
Nazis enjoying Jell-O.
I mean...
Somebody sat in the boardroom and decided that they were going to do this commercial.
Who should we have endorse our product? Who is it that can speak about the various wonderful aspects of Jell-O that will give this product the image that we want?
So it was...
Nazis!
It was Colonel Klink.
All of whom are Jewish, by the way. We should note that. All of the Nazis on Hogan's Heroes, which is great.
It was the last laugh.
I do think that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I do think that's great. By the way, not only are you going to lose the war, not only are we going to, there's going to be that image of us blowing up the swastika that was on top of that German building like 1,000 times. Not only, as Eddie Izzard would say, did Adolf Hitler spend his honeymoon in a ditch on fire covered with gasoline, but now all of the Nazis on television are going to be played by Jews. In your face, Hitler. It's been said a billion times how insane it is that there was a sitcom about, like, a Nazi prisoner of war camp. But the idea then that somehow Jell-O, the sponsor of Jack Benny, said, you know what? Nazis, they're the perfect characters to advertise our product. Well, whatever. And Jell-O's a weird product anyway. I mean, just a bunch of ground-up horse hooves is all that is. It's just weird. You know, this is like yesterday. Don and Mike last night, actually, this is strange. They were talking about propaganda from World War II, and they were playing a bunch of those old Bugs Bunny cartoons and Warner Brothers cartoons that you can't find anymore. We're like, Bugs Bunny is battling Hitler, you know, and stuff, or that Daffy Duck is hitting Hitler with a hammer, and there's that one where Donald Duck dreams that he's, like, working for Nazis, like, building bombs or something. And then there's all the really creepy ones. Some of the ones that I even remember from a kid, like where Bugs Bunny was doing like some slave minstrel thing, which I know is a different time and all, but goddamn, they just make your skin crawl now. Where Bugs Bunny is playing both Abraham Lincoln and a slave to outwit Yosemite Sam, who I believe is a Confederate soldier, and it's all just so weird. And I remember seeing those, you know, for a little bit of my childhood anyway. You just realize what a weird freaking country we live in. So there you go. Nazis advertising Jell-O. That's probably enough Nazi humor for now. We'll do the rest later. We'll spread it out throughout the show. Like so much macadamia butter on bread. Here's Jeremy.
Time for Geek Watch.
Okay.
Triple one.
Here's your Geek Watch. Whatever the hell.
High-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you...
Just a television show. That's all.
Uh-huh. Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... I mean, just listen on that.
There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn shit. You got it?
Energize.
Speaking of Geek Watch, Jeremy has entered the studio again. Maybe he'll... what's up with the micro? There's a big hole in the counter.
We're doing some tweaking.
High-speed modem is intolerable.
Kind of fixing stuff as we go. Sorry I don't got much for you today. It's a long day.
I feel bad for him. He's running around all...
I'm sorry.
All the station's problems.
I'm sorry. And you know what? And I think I irritated Brian, who's your boss the other day, when I made some crack about the engineering department on the air not hanging our television. And Brian emailed me. He's like, Brian, who's the director of engineering here, I made some crack about how, I didn't notice blah, blah, blah news story. I was too distracted by the television on our wall. Oh, wait a minute. And Brian sent me some message like 5 seconds later from his BlackBerry. He was like, screw you. See if I ever hang anything. And I had to apologize. I said, like, you know, I have to spread the abuse around. It can't just be Scotty.
It's only a radio show.
Well, I suggested to him that we hang it in the move-in studios.
Okay, you're dead to me.
There's the cricket. Yes, the computers need TV.
Yeah, that morning show needs to watch television.
way to go, Sarah. That's well done right there.
Genius.
Here's Tim.
The only thing moving in that room are flies. Well, AT&T is beefing up its staff in preparation for handling the introduction of Apple's iPhone later this month.
Oh, thanks.
The wireless service provider is the only one in the U.S. that will offer the iPhone. It has hired 2,000 temps to deal with the expected massive consumers rushing to get this new device. It's only $499.
Yeah, you can buy three of them.
The iPhone combines a music and video player with a web browser.
Why, that's revolutionary.
It's touch-sensitive. Yeah. In order to prepare for the launch of the iPhone, AT&T stores will close early on the 29th and reopen at 6 p.m. In addition, the sales staff at the wireless service has received a total of 100,000 hours of training time. It's a...
Okay.
How do they divide that up?
I don't understand. And further, this also just smells like PR, because theoretically...
PR.
Because it's an Apple product, so theoretically they shouldn't need a lot of training time. You should just be able to turn it on, and it works, and whatever. I will say, when I was at the Apple store a few weeks ago looking for that AV cable for my Zen, there was like, you know, already, just in like the 10 minutes it took me to go in there and be ignored. There were several people who walked in who I think were who were talked to because they were more fashionably attired than I. There were like three or four people who walked in. I'm gonna buy that iPhone. And they got sent away because the iPhone's not for sale. I'm really not trying to pick a fight about this. I'm really not. But here's the thing. This is the genius and the infuriation, if that is a word, of Apple. That there are just hundreds of thousands of gallons of real and virtual ink being spilled about a product that no one has seen. And that doesn't do anything that, like, products that you could buy 5 years ago don't do. I mean, here's the thing. I got a phone upstairs at my desk that I've had for a year that does everything the iPhone does. Okay?
No, that can't
be. It does. It plays music. It browses the internet. It's a cell phone. Now, granted.
But it's not an iPhone.
Granted, it's not touch sensitive, but you know what? But the Trio is.
And I don't want it.
I'm just saying, touch sensitive screen. I mean, I think a touch sensitive screen, I think they, you know, I mean. That's the thing they had, you know, like 20 years ago.
That's a little finicky to me, too. I don't really trust touch screen anything.
Well, I mean, you know, and touch screens, I mean, you know what, they've had touch screens in ATMs for like 15 years now. So I'm really not trying to be obnoxious about it. Steve Jobs is the Apple. They are marketing geniuses. I will say that in many ways, they are geniuses. They're stylish products, and I don't mean that to sound snippy. They are brilliant, stylishly made products in many ways. But the thing that is so great about Apple is also the thing that makes people so irritated at Apple is that this product doesn't... This is like that guy that sent me the email, like, you are now officially stupid because you didn't buy an iPod. I mean, that's the genius of Apple, right? Is that they have convinced people that because I purchased something that was not an iPod, I am, like, functionally retarded. So, and an iPhone, I remember his best friend, Matt Peterson, going on and on. Like a year and a half ago, when they just sort of hinted that the thing existed. Steve Jobs, I have this thing, one more thing. You know, and he barely hit, and Matt was doing cartwheels. Virtual cartwheels, anyway. about the iPhone. Which, again, doesn't do anything. The products haven't been doing for like 8-9 years. So, anyway, that's my little thing.
iPhone buyers will be able to access YouTube videos via Edge and Wi-Fi networks.
No! Yes. That's not possible! That technology is so advanced, I don't believe this story.
Apple has also announced a software update for Apple TV that allows console owners to browse through YouTube content.
That is crazy. I wish I had some device that would let me view YouTube videos.
Well, it's coming out at the end of the month.
I wish there was some technology now that would let me view videos on the net. I just don't know where I'd be able to find such technology. It seems so superhumanly advanced that it seems like magic. All right.
Sorry. Go ahead.
They probably just send an annual for all you know.
Totally.
Does Apple advertise on the radio?
They will now.
Yeah.
Every time you beat something into the ground, some salesman...
And here I am talking about it. Here I am doing exactly what Steve Jobs wants me to do.
I haven't said a word.
God love him.
I really do love Steve Jobs. I really do. He's a great guy. I don't know why. Steve, you know what I am? Here's the thing.
What are you?
I am to Steve Jobs like some of those listeners are to us who, like, hate us but listen to us constantly. Mm. Listen to the show every second, every day, but hate us. That's my thing with Steve Jobs. I don't hate him, but he fills me with so much irritation, but goddamn, I just love the guy. I really do. Because he's managed to pull the proverbial wool over everybody's eyes for years and years and years. So, all right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The Lord of the Rings music on the most expensive production in West End London history. Open to mixed reviews, and some critics praised it as brilliant. Others said it was corny, and it was a great flop.
That's hard to believe.
This is a $25 million show based on Tolkien's literary trilogy about a hobbit named Frodo and his quest to
the Middle East of oil.
It's been trimmed and reworked since its Toledo premiere.
Okay. The only thing about the article is just a picture of Andrew Lloyd Webber at the premiere, and he looks like a toad. Mm. Andrew Lloyd Webber looks like Christopher Hitchens if he really let himself go. Like if he just ate nothing but margarine sticks for about a year. All right.
That's it.
Okay.
We're doing this top five.
Now, I thought that was a triple geek watch.
That was a triple geek watch. I read three stories.
What was there? Was the iPod, the Lord of the Rings? What was the other one?
iPod, Lord of the Rings.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize there were two Apple things. I thought it was just one long.
No, there were
big,
two short ones.
Okay. All right.
They weren't connected.
Well, we'll have more tomorrow. We'll talk about the Apple product.
Endlessly.
Talk about the iPhone every single day until the end of time.
Yes.
I have to take these calls before we break. These people are waiting for an hour. Let's see. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. You've met a famous person in the bathroom. Please forgive me for making you hold so long.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay.
I met Steve Harris in a hotel bathroom in Rio de Janeiro.
From Iron Maiden?
Yes.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, the story is my wife is a journalist. She, you know, camps out at the hotels and interviews, you know, famous rock stars, gets photographs with them and whatnot. I was there with her. And the situation was, Bruce Dickinson, he was in the hotel bar, and he was just sitting there at a table with some guy, and along the bar, there was maybe like 30 kids that were just sitting on the bar stool, and they were all watching him like a hawk, and nobody could really walk up to him and talk to him, or else.
Sure.
I kind of got bored of watching Bruce Dickinson have a drink, so I...
Were you expecting him... So, because you're expecting him to do something like Bruce Dickinson.
Yeah. Wait,
my drink is cold. I need more ice. You know, just like you're, I mean, what is he, you know?
Wave around a British flag, you know, maybe totally. Eddie will come out and start.
An undead zombie bringing him more olives.
Yeah. But anyway, I, you know, just kind of got a little antsy, so I got up, walked around, and went to the bathroom, and hey, it's Steve Harris. He's walking out of the bathroom. I must add that he didn't wash his hands, you know, I was a little stunned. I wasn't really expecting that, so I, just like a dork, said, oh, hey, what's up? And he's like, hey, how's it going? And then just walked out.
Let me just tell you this, a quick story. When I was working in another market, I was working for a radio station. We were working, we were owned by one company, and then another company bought us. And they brought in, like, the vice president of acquisitions for the West Coast, or whoever the guy was. Anyway, they're like, there'll be a meeting in the boardroom. And so we're waiting in the boardroom to hear from the guy who's just bought our company or whatever. And they before he got there, they announced who it was going to be. And they're like, so we've been bought by such and such company. Their majority shareholder will be here. His name is Steve Harris. And all of the DJs and I in the other room looked at each other and were like, that's badass! We're bought by the guy Iron Maiden! And then he was just like some white guy with a bad haircut. So,
yeah.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Oh, thank you.
God bless you. All right, one more. Mike, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, Rick, this is Mike, biologist.
Hey, what's up?
Not much. You mentioned earlier about the McDonald's at Auschwitz.
Yes, sir.
And I've been to that McDonald's, coincidentally.
So creepy. Did you feel creepy eating there?
Actually, the story is I didn't eat there. In fact, there's a cafe in the visitor center at Auschwitz. And I was starving to death, and so I got a burger, which was basically an unidentifiable meat with half a red pepper on it.
Yeah.
Worst meal of my life.
Well, it's just so weird. Auschwitz doesn't seem like a place that they ought to be having a cafe. It just seems, maybe that's just, it'd be like having a McDonald's inside, I don't know, insert other thing. Like, I don't know, like inside Ellis Island or something. It just seems weird and wrong and strange.
Yeah, and I got horribly sick, and so we, our tour group, had to stop a few blocks away from the death camp at the McDonald's so I could puke my guts out.
Well, if ever you were going to be puking, it does seem like a death camp is an appropriate place to do that. It's not like a happy place anyway, so just have all the bad vibes at once. I mean, I'm not like some hippie, trippy, you know, like Buddhist kind of guy, but that just seems like bad karma to be making a profit at a place, you know, like by selling goods and services at a death camp. That seems like a thing that maybe your business could just move on down the road a little bit. That would be my thought about that. All right. Excellent. Thank you. I appreciate the call. Thank you. All right. I actually kind of wondered if that was an urban legend, but apparently not. All right. We're going to break now. And then we'll come back. We'll be on time. Look at that. Who is this?
This is My Life in Black and White.
Excellent.
Oh, I really like this song.
We played these guys earlier.
Yeah.
All right, we come back. More from Tim Riley. Top 5 songs stolen from other songs. And Fat Boy from Court and Fat Boy on Rock 101 KUFO to talk about Lil Bush. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Leprosy. Hi, it's the Rick Emerson Show. It's 503-733-2970.
I want the money.
Okay. Here's a...
it is really itchy.
Here's a call on the screen. Your hand is itchy. You should clarify with you.
It is my palm.
Let me tell you what's on the call screen right now. We had Frank here about dog knowing left from right. We'll probably take that one. Here's what's on one of the other lines. And then it has Scotty's notation. Scotty says, take this. It's a good one. And the description of the call, Mike with Auschwitz joke.
Scotty J, this is David Cassidy. I don't know what else to say except...
You're not going to amount to that!
All right, Scotty J now entering the studio, Intrepid PA. Hello, sir.
Good afternoon, everybody.
How are you today? You don't seem like you're having a good day.
I'm having a great day.
Keep poking at him. If he's not having a good day,
I'm not poking.
Maybe he doesn't need to, maybe he doesn't want to reveal what's going on.
I'm inquiring.
Maybe you make my day worse by saying, I mean, it might have been a good day, and then you say you're having a bad day, and then you're like, oh, you're right.
Maybe you make it worse by talking back a little too much. Maybe that's it. What's what you that thinking for yourself?
Daddy, I don't know. I'm just saying Rick wasn't too happy.
I'm having a good
35
day.
Minutes late. And no, I knew you'd be fine.
There's no such thing as late with me.
You don't want to say it?
Oh, he said the worst thing. Wait, what
that is
the
me. I said, I was something I said this
no,
morning.
No, I know. I remember.
Because the last few days, because Scotty normally is here early-ish, and the last few days through, I'm sure there's a reason for it. I'm just saying the last few days, not late, but later than you normally are. That will put it that way. Normally, you have been, the last few days, you've been getting to work later in the morning.
He also has further travel than normal.
It is true. It is true. And so, well, this morning, you don't want to reveal what I said?
Oh, yeah, Rick said, where's that Scotty J? The coffee ain't going to make itself.
I did say that.
It was really mean. He said it in the kitchen.
Hey, that's okay. I know you've slept in before. I've been totally... And when I sleep in, and
dude, I didn't get here till like 9:30 this morning because I'm sitting there because from OMSI, walk my bike all the way here, which seems like it's 5 minutes on your bike, man. It's like 5 hours when you have to walk. So I totally know that.
It's the distance.
When it says here on the screen, take this Auschwitz joke. It's really good.
Well, we're on the subject of Germany today for some reason.
I like how somehow. The subject of Germany for this show, it's just entirely Auschwitz. Like, we're not really, let's be honest, we're not on the subject of Germany. We're on the subject of Nazis.
Oh,
I can say this. I'm German, by the way. I can make any comments I want. Here's what we're going to do. We'll turn off the microphones. I'll have you tell me the Auschwitz joke.
Great idea.
All right, hold on a second. Let me just...
I'm taking a fall out of T-Mix so people can't hear.
All right. No, we're not going to tell that joke, but thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay.
So, Mike, you're on hold. I apologize.
I don't think
he feels like he's wasted his time. We're going to pass on that.
I don't think you can wah-wah the Holocaust.
You can if you ask someone from Iraq.
Wait, no, that's a little piece of advice. That's a, I'm putting that inside a fortune cookie
or
someday.
Iran. No, not Iran.
You can't feed your family with a cod piece, and you can't feed your family with a cod piece, and you can't the Holocaust. You can't wah-wah the Holocaust. No, it's true, though. I mean, it really is. That has the added advantage of being true. All right. No, you can stay right here.
So that was a goodie,
and,
huh?
Oh, and then we're going to help. We're going to have you do the top five, because Dan's busy doing some stuff. So, hi, Frank, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, what's up, Rick?
What have you?
Well, I was thinking about the dog thing from this morning.
Uh-huh.
And have you ever dropped a piece of food on the ground when you're sitting at your dinner table and your dog, you know, is trying to get at it? Which foot do they use?
Oh, so you're saying it's sort of like knowing your native language. It's whatever say, it's whatever you say when you hit your
foot
with a hammer.
Like my daughter has a Pomeranian, and my wife does daycare, and the Pomeranian gets up on the chair with his feet, and he's kind of sitting up there, but he uses his right hand or paw.
Here's the funny thing.
Grab it.
You have to know this. As you're describing watching your dog pawing at the ground, trying to pick something up or get something, Scotty, I swear to God, is like on his hands and knees, pawing at the bottom of his chair, trying to fix it. And I swear to God, for all the world, looks like my poodle. Okay, no, fair enough. So that, okay, well, you know what? I'll try that with my dog. I'll kind of stash something just out of reach and see what he does.
Because that would make sense, because whatever foot he uses, that would make, you know.
That is his dominant foot, then. No, yeah, that makes total sense, sir.
There you go.
All right, thank you, my friend.
No problem.
All right, there you go. And thank you for not slipping in an Auschwitz joke while you're there. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, let us now begin today's
top five. 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting is the best thing to do.
Ladies and gentlemen, this was actually something. A guy requested this. A guy said, a guy requested specifically that we do this. But it actually has the double benefit of being applicable, because we're going to talk about Lil Bush, which may or may not have been blatantly stolen from The Adventures of George W. Bush, boy, president, pardon me. So it all ties together. A guy had asked that we bring this back, one of our top fives from the past.
Yeah, this is about, a year and a half ago?
Yeah, it's been a while since we did. These are the top five songs clearly stolen from other songs. Scotty J. will be helping to count these down. Go ahead, Scotty.
All right, these are the top five stolen songs, just like Rick just said. With number 10, George Harrison.
Okay, so here's how we'll play these.
10?
George, well...
Yeah.
No, you're... No.
I guess we got to start over, right? Let's do a do-over here on this Rick Emerson
Let's
show.
Let's not play the whole thing.
Yeah, you just say it again.
Do it again, Scotty.
Well, these are the top five stolen songs on AM 970. We're going to play 10 because we have to play the song that was stolen from the other.
So much worse than the first time. Try it again.
Okay, these are the top five stolen songs here at the Rick Emerson Show. Number 10.
No.
Well, you know what? You know, when the radio is off or the mics are off, we should probably talk to each other and say, you know, I would like you to do it this way. Otherwise, you get the Scotty J way.
Remember the problem with the first time you did it, how you said 10? And then we said that it was 5.
And then when you did it over, you said 10 twice in a row again.
Okay, so am I like saying this is number 5 even though it's number 10?
It's not number...
Okay.
Yeah. I number 5.
Okay, the number 5 song, George Harrison, My Sweet.
My Sweet Lord.
Okay.
So this is My Sweet Lord by George Harrison. We'll let this establish itself.
You know, math is one of my better subjects, Rick.
Uh-huh.
How about you?
So this is a legendary bit of theft. This is a huge lawsuit. He ended up paying out the ass for this, too. Stolen from, Scotty?
The Chiffons. He's So Fine.
I'm so glad you didn't say Chiffin or something. I was so afraid you were going to say Chiffin.
He's so...
So, I mean, they're virtually the same song. They're completely the same song.
They are.
I mean, the melody, like, note for note. And a lot of times you hear songs, you're like, I cannot believe they're not getting sued for this. Well, his ass got completely sued for this. And the judge just laughed at him. And he had to fork over millions of dollars for this.
You know, it just hit me. I know how this top five works now.
Thanks. Now that you've had 3 hours and 20 minutes to work on it. And at least two do-overs. All right. These are the top five songs stolen from other songs. At number four,
Shakira, Underneath Your Clothes.
I do love this song.
Okay, now Sarah, you don't have this list in front of you, do you?
Oh, I know this.
But that's what I'm saying.
Hand, darling, do you hear
me? No. All right, okay. I thought you were going to hand her the list.
Oh, no.
I was going to ask if you... I was going to say, I will play this for you. We'll see if you can spot where they're stolen.
Oh, my God, this is the exact same song.
Let's try it again. Now, don't give it away quite yet.
Okay, but yeah, you tell us what it is.
Yeah, you tell us what this is stolen from. This is Shakira underneath my clothes.
I never thought of this.
Oh, my God.
It's blatant.
I mean, I know what it is. Am I not supposed to say it?
No, just let it go for a second. This might sound to you
a bit odd. How many notes did it take, Sarah?
The first note, go ahead.
Oh, my God. Wow. Right under your
foot. Where?
Stolen from Scotty?
The Bangles, Eternal Flame.
I know I was saying this, but it's the same song.
Now, we learned a little something about music the other night at the PDX Teen Idol. Now, the bridge, is that where they go into the, just before the chorus?
No, that's a pre-chorus. A bridge is usually a middle section, usually eight bars, that is different from the rest of the song. It's not like anything else in the song.
Okay. Well, the Shakira song does the exact same.
Yeah. Yeah, the bridge is normally a different chord progression. It's usually different than anything before it or after it in the song. Yeah, it's exactly. This is a beautiful song, too. Man, Susanna Hoffs, beautiful, great voice. Am I only dreaming? Counting down the top five songs clearly stolen from other songs. Go ahead, Scotty.
At number six, What I've Got. By Sublime. Early in the morning, rising to the street. Light me up a cigarette, and I've got shoes on my feet. Got to find the reason. I just want to hear this song just for the edit.
Well done. All right, Sarah, a guess?
I don't know.
Scotty? Stolen from?
This song was blatantly stolen from The Beatles.
Oh, yeah.
It's exactly the
Lady
same.
Lady Madonna.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally the same. Just the tempo difference. Lady Madonna, children at your feet. Wonder how you managed to make it. I mean, so much so that this actually sounds like a sped-up version of the Sublime song. When you pay the rent, did you think that money was heaven sent? You know what else is stolen? Get a Job by The Offspring is stolen from Obla Di Obla Das. And Cecilia by Simon and Garfunkel. That's not on the list, but that just occurred to me. All right, counting down the top five songs blatantly stolen from other songs. Scotty?
The number two song goes to...
Your copyright 2000. That's all me. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Yes, the number two song's a joke. No. Oasis. Shaker Maker.
Tim will know this one. Who is this stolen from?
I don't know.
Well, there was a commercial out there.
Tim's busy dealing with the black buttons.
Let's give him a little hint.
All right, well, let's let him listen. I still don't know. All right, wait till the lyric starts again, the verse. Listen to the melody of the verse here and tell me if you can spot it. Famous song of the 70s.
I know this. I don't. I don't know what it's called.
Do I need to give the hint?
No.
Well, let me give the hint.
Tim is disengaged from this entire project.
There was a cola commercial.
Well, it doesn't say, isn't this, I could show the world a something.
Oh, I like to teach the world to sing in perfect.
Yeah. Game.
Very nice.
Oh.
New Seekers.
Or the Hillside Singers. What a terrible song. You know, it's amazing that Noel Gallagher didn't get sued for this. I love Oasis, but boy, he's just an intellectual pickpocket sometimes.
Now, didn't he sue somebody else for stealing from him?
I don't think so, but I mean, Noel Gallagher's in no position to sue anybody. I love Oasis, but that guy's in no position to accuse anybody of stealing. I mean, I know, here we go again. It's the same song. I mean, if you were to see these in the notation for these, they're exactly the same. All right, counting down the top five songs stolen from other songs.
The number one song goes to Beach Boys' Surfing USA.
They did get sued. They got hella sued for this. They got sued. I mean, here's the thing. And I'll tell you that the exciting ending to this. I'll tell you the rest of the story when we get to the other. It's the listing of cities here that's especially blatant. It's not just the chord progression and the melody. It's when they start listing cities. All the hot surfing spots. And I say this is a huge Beach Boys fan, by the way. Stolen from, Scotty?
Chuck Berry, Sweet Little 16.
They're really rocking in motion.
Oh, man.
It's 38.
Well, you can kind of see the trends of what happens.
Yes.
Like the Beatles, for instance, they invent, you know, certain chords or play whatever, a certain sound.
There's no trend. This is theft. This is theft. Here's how big a theft this is. If you look at the publishing information for Surfin' USA, Chuck Berry is now listed as the sole songwriter.
Wow.
On a song he didn't even write the lyrics for. I mean, clearly on Surfin' USA, they stole the music and the melody. Brian Wilson obviously wrote the lyrics. It was so egregious, the judge just gave all of the publishing to Chuck Berry. So Chuck Berry is now listed as the sole songwriter of Surfin' USA. Who clearly he didn't write, you know, clearly he didn't write the lyrics for it. But that's how blatant it was. That the judge just told the Beach Boys, like, F you don't get any credit for it at all anymore.
Well, I kind of don't blame him because you can hear it in the chords that everybody's going surfing.
Yeah, it's the same song.
Surfing USA.
Yes,
I mean, deadbeat.
Yes, it's called theft. It's called plagiarism. Back after this with Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth, Gordon Fatboy from Rock 101 KUFO, and more stories of comedy. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Rick, since the retarded aren't making money from your bike riding, maybe people could donate money every day that Scotty doesn't drink. Oh, wait. Never mind. Never mind indeed, sir. 503-733-2970. Just a skosh as our Asian friends, they will touch Gordon Fatboy from Rock 101. KUFO. Actually, before we do, Sarah, into the Tim thing, let me do this glorious bastard of the week, and then we'll roll that right into the Ministry of Truth with Tim Riley. Let me just... Greetings and salutations, Adam Lovelace. You are Adam Lovelace. You are being addressed at this moment because you, yes, you, have been selected as the AM 970 Glorious Bastard of the Week with all the rights and privileges that entails. In addition to the envy of your fellow man, you'll receive a bountiful cornucopia of swag from the AM 970 pile of crap, including but not limited to tickets to OMSI's Body Worlds 3, as well as the wonderful knowledge that, for at least this 1 week, you are just a little bit better than everyone else.
Enjoy your newly elevated status and don't hesitate to lord it over the less fortunate. After all, that is why God created them. Thank you for listening, Adam Lovelace, for you are the glorious bastard of the week.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Tony Sheriff's Deputy spotted an out-of-control passenger who tried to open an emergency exit during a flight from Phoenix to Seattle.
Creepy.
Doug Stanley was returning from a dream vacation in Missouri. He was aboard U.S. Airways Flight 78 when a passenger in the seat in front of him began acting erratically and attempted to open up the emergency exit door. Flight attendants tried to calm the man, but it didn't work. So, his off-duty Sheriff's Deputy wrestled him to the floor and slopped the cuffs on him.
Fantastic.
Today's hero, Doug Stanley, hails from Kennewick.
Really?
Yes, I'm afraid so.
And now you know the rest of the story. And here's the great thing about that is, well, first of all, everybody has that fear, by the way. And not only has everybody had that fear, everybody has thought about doing it. Everybody has sat on a plane, and every time you're...
I sat in the emergency row coming back from New Orleans, and it's so tempting. It's kind of those things where you have to trust yourself. Like, exactly. When you're standing on the edge of a cliff, like, yeah. I could jump.
Like how I
could do it right now.
Like how I don't veer head-on into oncoming traffic sometimes, even though I know that I could. Just
yeah,
one.
Kiki and I were in the emergency row, and that big handle was just right there. We were there twice.
Yeah, but I don't think that you could actually open it.
No, you can't.
In flight.
Here's the thing.
It's not a D.B. Cooper thing.
You can't, actually, because here's a little-known fact about those doors. The deal, if you've ever watched the stewardess, or whatever the hell we call them now, the skirt, if you've ever watched her when she opens those doors at the end of the flight, the deal is they don't open, what am I trying to say? They don't open, you have to push them out. And then they swing in, or they have to go out before you can do anything. In other words, the air pressure is set, or is it the other way around? No, it's the other way around. You have to pull them in a little bit, and then the lock disengages, and then they open outward.
I guess it takes some practice.
Well, whatever. The point is, it's set up so that the air pressure is such, so that they can't be opened while they're in the air. Now I don't even know in my head how it works. Now I need to see some sort of schematic. But the point is, the air pressure is such that you've actually got to... Because apparently they did take into account that some sort of crazed nutcase would do that. But that's the sort of thing that they never figure out until someone actually does it. Just like the D.B. Cooper thing. That's why there's that thing that doesn't allow you to lower the tail section of a plane when you're in the air. That device called a Cooper's Bane. So there you go. And now, here's Tim Riley.
So a Kennewick man saves lives.
Yeah.
How can we begin to thank him?
And to let him live somewhere else. Come and rescue him and move him to almost anywhere else on the planet. Move him to Rwanda.
About 250 goats will be chopping at Lewis Creek Park in Bellevue this week, and apparently controlling the weeds in the meadow habitat. Park Ranger Laura Hughes explains why they use goats.
Hose the goats over something that would be like a noisy machinery or a pesticide, because it's a lot more environmentally friendly.
She's 12 years old. Goats have roamed the area in the past.
Historically, this area has had a lot of farms up here, and grazing has been the primary means of controlling those invasive species at this particular site.
Invasive what?
Species.
Okay. All right, sorry. Scotty, is this the same guy with an Auschwitz joke?
No,
we're not doing jokes today.
No, it's too...
Call screener, Scotty. Screener.
Screener. It's too soon,
not
Scotty.
Screamer.
It's too, all right.
Too soon.
It's, hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Why, hello there.
Hi there. How do you like the new studio so far?
Are we being made the object of fun, sir?
Is this a former engineer?
Yes, it is.
All right. Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Uh-huh.
I didn't think they had the phones working at Entercom.
All right. Well, Howard, never mind. I'm not going to say anything. No. Oh, wait, hold on. We have an answer. No, you're not. We have an answer on the door thing. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, you there?
I don't know. Let me check. He's not. He left. No. Existentially speaking, I am not here. But in the physical sense, yes, I am, sir.
Good. This is Bill the Science Guy.
Hi, how can I help you, Bill the Science Guy?
Good, it's been a long time since we talked, but it's a perfect opportunity for me to call in and tell you why the door won't open.
Why will not the door open?
Well, I say, mangling my syntax.
You're in the plane with the air rushing by. It creates a low pressure on the outside, so the inside cabin is pushing outwards, so the door does have to come in. You can't possibly overcome the pressure.
That's right.
By pulling the door in, you have to pull it in before it'll pop back out, and that prevents the doors from just being open any point.
Excellent. Fantastic. Let me ask you this, a real quick question. Now, this has probably been covered on like a Mythbusters kind of thing, but if I take a gun, and not that I've ever thought about doing this, but if I've got a dead cheerleader in the trunk of my car, if I take a gun and I blow a hole through one of those windows, do we all get sucked out?
No, it'll just be a huge jet of air moving outward. If you wouldn't want to be near a completely open window. If you shot a hole through it, most likely it would explode outward, and then an arm or a leg or head might get pulled out, and you'd have some excruciating pain as you were slowly pinched through the window.
Genius. So it's sort of the end of Alien Resurrection come to life.
Pretty much.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Take care, guys.
Excellent. There you go. All right. Let's do one more, and then we'll talk to our good friends Gordon Pepler.
Poisoned rocker Bret Michaels may be taking cues from the rapper Flavor Flav. The singer is set to start a new VH1 dating program and called Rock of Love with Bret Michaels. Flavor Flav, similar series on the networks, Flavor of Love was a huge hit and even prompted a female version called I Love New York. 44-year-old Michaels will be given the chance to date some 21 ladies. TMZ reports that Michaels is, quote, looking for a woman who can truly keep up with his rock and roll lifestyle. What?
How fast could his rock and roll lifestyle really be at this point?
He was already married to that freaky blonde lady.
Bret Michaels?
Yeah, wasn't that him?
There are plenty of freaky blonde ladies.
Please to be more vague.
Well, no, he has all this weird plastic surgery now, too, doesn't he?
No.
Are you sure?
I don't know. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. By the way, let's give it up for Tim Riley, world's greatest newsman.
Bravo.
He'll be back at 4, 5, 6, and 7, top of the hour, the way through Tom Likas. Thank you, Tim.
Quick corrections. Poison, not poisoned.
Hold on.
You can't correct Tim.
Are you telling me that Tim
Flavor Flav, not Flavor Flav? Well, you're thinking of Vince Neil, Sarah.
Oh, is that who?
Yeah.
Bret Michaels himself is a ugly blonde woman.
Yes.
Well, you live a different rock and roll lifestyle than I do.
Maybe you say Flavor Flav. I say Flavor Flav. Don't correct me. It sickens me. A little 1% joke there. All right. Did Vince Neil have a bunch of weird? Did he get his face all?
He had a whole VH1 series about it.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm thinking of.
Because he got all puffy.
Yeah,
he's still all puffy.
Yeah. He got all that taken out and then he repuffed.
Yeah.
Can you just get all this taken out of me, please? Dave Zinn, the gatekeeper, he gave me this Vince Neil. Gave me the copy of the Vince Neil Live at the Roxy. In L.A.?
Oof. Oh, yeah.
He was, like, live on the Strip or something.
Oh, is that the thing where he's playing with a Motley Crue cover band?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's him backed by a Motley Crue tribute band. And I ripped it right to my MP. It was like this, because I got this new MP3 player. It was, like, the first thing I ripped to it. Like, I'm going to christen it with this bad Vince Neil solo project, which I've still not listened to. It was, like, a month ago. And I haven't listened to it yet, because really, why?
Yeah.
You know? So, all right. So let's talk about Lil... Oh, this really ought to be a Bushwatch. Let's go ahead and make this a...
He's the president in residence, kind of in charge. He's got the whole country saying, that's my Bush. Life is hard, that's the price of fame. When you're president, everyone knows your name. Hey, what's that thing? It's my Bush. I can't believe he's actually in the White House. That's our world.
So you guys have been doing this bit on your program called The Adventures of George W. Bush, Boy President.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
For how long now?
August 2005.
There you go.
I like you got the date. as almost as though that's going to be put in some sort of deposition. these were years, literally years.
Yeah.
And so there is this program, you may have heard of it, on Comedy Central called Lil Bush.
Yeah, we've heard of it.
Now, how long is that one episode or two? How long has it been on?
It's been on for two episodes on Comedy Central. It started out as a quick little 5-minute viral animation solely for Amped Mobile,
Viral? I think it was just intentionally.
Was it just Amped Mobile?
Yeah, it was just Amped Mobile.
Okay. I think Amped Mobile paid to have them put it on their cell phones.
Yeah. So it started out as a short bit.
Yeah, yes. 5-minute thing similar to George W. Bush.
Interestingly enough, we made our George W. Bush Boy Presidents available on the web about 3 months after we aired them in August. And almost exactly a year to the date is when Amped Mobile started running Lil Bush.
Why, that is interesting.
Yeah. It is an interesting fact.
And so how did you guys first hear about the Lil Bush?
Well, somebody actually called us about the Amped Mobile thing. Or maybe we saw it on the news. Either way, it was kind of an Amped Mobile thing. We checked it out. It was garbage, so we weren't really all that worried about it.
Yeah. Who would pick this up? It's no threat at all.
Yeah. And then it was not long after that the Comedy Central announced that they're going to pick up Lil Bush and make it a half an hour, stretching out the garbage even thinner, I guess.
Now, isn't Comedy Central owned? I can never keep this straight.
Yeah.
Yes. Aren't we owned by...
Yeah.
Is it owned by CBS?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure is.
Yeah.
So, even if we wanted to, you know, and I'm not saying that this is even actionable because they're just different enough that I think even if you tried to take it to court...
Let's not dwell on the differences. Let's dwell on how similar they are. What are the things that are the same?
George W. Bush, boy president. Yeah. He's a little kid, essentially.
I haven't watched the show, but we got one guy who said it was funny. And who said that those who didn't find it funny were just not bright enough to get the writing.
Lil Bush?
Message.
Okay, and I'm just saying. I just wanted to clarify that.
But everybody else said it was crap. Everybody else said it was dog whistle.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it. Is it terrible? Is it awful?
It is really bad. Yeah. It is pedestrian writing at its most mediocre.
Yeah.
It's not a case of I'm not smart enough to understand it. I understand it. I understand that a third grader could have come up with it if he thought he was politically
It's Carlos
active.
Mencia doing George W. Bush writing. That's what it is. It's Carlos Mencia humor.
Yeah. That does sound gripping. So now if I can ask this, now George W. Bush for president, did you create that at CBS?
Yeah.
So it's like a thing that, just a whole weirdness about like who, how do you even...
Here's the thing, if we could prove that they downloaded a couple of our episodes and was like, okay, we're going to rip off this concept, alter it a little bit, animate it, and sell it to Amped Mobile, and then sell it to CBS... A, I think that's giving them too much credit, because if they had that amount of brains, the show would be funny.
Yeah.
Okay, but even if we could prove that, it wouldn't matter, because the intellectual property is CBS's, since we made it on CBS's dime, and they were smart enough to sell the property back to CBS. So what's CBS going to do? If we make a stink, it's like, okay, well, here's the show that's on Comedy Central versus the night show on the rock station in Portland.
You know, and just to think, yesterday, Sarah heard me agonize during one of the breaks yesterday. I was just all torn about doing some bit that bore like a passing resemblance to like this thing that Marconi did like one time, like months ago, that was almost completely different. I was like, I just don't know if it's right. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and so you guys are like being flat out like Xerox by some hack.
Yeah. And what makes it even sillier is that, I mean, it was funny when we came up with it, and it's still sort of funny, but I mean, in 2005, we were already pushing the expiration date for Bush humor.
Seriously.
Really. I mean, we kind of got grandfathered in with this.
Had we, I mean, That's My Bush, that was the show that really kind of pushed some buttons, because they did that right out the gate. So, had we done George W. Bush, boy president back then, maybe we'd be edgy, but I mean, 2005, everybody already started hating the man back then, so to put out Lil Bush now, it's...
Roll it out with your Yakov Smirnoff.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kicking
a dead dog. I mean, who cares?
All right. Well, sorry about that. All right. Okay. Well, look, maybe the show will get canceled. That's what we're hoping. Yeah. If it was a successful show, we'd probably be a lot more burnt about it.
Right.
But the fact that it's dog crap and no one's really watching, and the people who are watching are clawing their eyeballs out.
Yeah.
We're not sweating it so much. It's probably going to get canceled 3 episodes, 4 tops. No one will remember it ever existed, just like they won't remember our show.
We got break here, but real quickly, the Transformers has been moved up. It's what, the second?
The second.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And I know that I can't speak for y'all, but on our website, we're going to be doing a Transformers launch party thing.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
The 970 website next week. We'll talk more about that. So.
Right.
Court and Fatboy, 7 to 11, I'm sorry, 7 to midnight, Rock 101, KUFO, and courtandfatboy.com.
Yes.
We'll play.
You're saying that.
Yeah, we'll...
when you lose that bet.
Back after this is the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere.
He's the president, resident, kind of in charge. He's got the whole country saying, that's my bird.
Saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the Rick Emerson Show. Oh, also, big announcement coming tomorrow. You know the big announcement.
Is it the big announcement that I was jumping up and down about
yesterday?
Yes, it is. Really?
Yes, it is.
Lock, loaded, signed, sealed.
Real? What about the...
That, I don't know. Remains to be seen. That,
That is so cool.
That's a matter of personal persnicketiness, I suppose.
I am so excited.
I'm sorry.
Oh, my gosh.
So we can announce that tomorrow. Big announcement on the Rick Emerson Show tomorrow about the happenings, as they say. Happening. Rick, I thought it was universally agreed that the beginning of the end of the Summer Love was Altamont. Yeah, I can see that. Also, I feel like it's a little known fact that everybody knows there's a gap on the corner of Hayton Ashbury. Let's see, what else do we have here? Rick, I just walked into my kitchen and found an empty 10-pack of frozen burritos in my sink. Apparently, I ate all of them in a drunken bender. I assume I heated them up first, but I can't find a plate as evidence. I don't feel well. I thought you'd like to know. Thank you, sir. You know, never mind.
What?
No, it's just nothing but Nazi jokes. Let's see, what else do we have? Rick, I don't know if you know this or not, but I've just lost my email. Okay, I was going to go out real strong there, then I lost the email. I minimized the window, and now it's gone. Oh, here we go. Rick, you know there was actually a television program in England called Heil Honey, I'm Home. In the early 90s, it was a concept where Hitler and Eva Braun lived in suburbia, next door to a Jewish family. Hilarity ensues, etc. Ha, ha. And then here's a YouTube link. Well, all right. Maybe tomorrow, sir. We're maxed out today. Rick Emerson Show produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970 Solid State Radio. In the newsroom, Tim Riley. The PA is Scotty J. And, of course, the gatekeeper is Dave Zinn. We want to thank CNN Radio correspondents Jim Roop and Lisa Goddard. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have, things and stuff and merriment and more stories of comedy. Like us next. Tom Likas next, Likas 101 at 5 o'clock, Donna Mike at 7, and of course Stephanie Miller tomorrow at 6, Dennis Miller at 8. We'll see you at 11. Dude, try to help the retarded and the whole thing where I talk and then I don't, but watch out for snakes.
I mean, little German boys had the shoelaces in little Nazis.